This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm Ghost Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTBN studios. And Scott Criscolo, my PIC, joins me as always. Scotland, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. 96 of the longest running episodic motherfucking gold standard. And you know what, 40 episodes ago, which was what, like last Thanksgiving, we were like, yeah, 500 is going to be in like 6 years. And it still feels far away because of our new schedule. But technically, we are not that far away.
Just a few episodes away. It's crazy to think. And then
it is,
we're just
going
to be gone like that. The whole thing's just going to implode.
Yep, just going to walk away. Down. See ya.
Be over.
On a high note. On a high note.
All right. How are you? Oh, I wouldn't call it a high note, but how are you?
It'll be a very high note. Okay, it'll be an exceptionally high note, not just a high note. I'm good. I'm good. How are you doing? How was your weekend? What did you hang and bang?
I hung and bung, yeah. It was filled with calamities, as always. But also some sun. I went to a pool party Saturday. I went to the beach yesterday. It was a Governor's Bay Day, so free entrance. So it's a hot ticket, wow. Rhode Island.
Very nice.
The governor herself, Gina, was making the rounds around the beach. She walked by us.
Because where's the Fung? The Fung should have thrown her in the water.
And the Fungster. He's ramping up his campaign, so it'll be hot and heavy come end of the year. So
go Fung. Where was the fucking pool weather last Sunday? That's what I want.
Yeah,
to
I know, right? We're at my uncle. We went there last night too after the beach because my cousin was in from out of town. And it was just perfect. I was looking at the field, the wiffle ball field, and I'm like, oh, this. Where was this just 7 days ago?
But, I know.
Alas.
Anyway, on the side note, since first time we've talked, another exceptional St. Mary's throwdown last Saturday, as we always do.
Yeah, I think one of the best. It was a great time. Had a blast. Played beer pong late into the night, which is rare these days. So that was a lot of fun. Ate some grapes.
Yes, a lot of grapes. We weren't sure which Jell-O shots we were eating, children or adults. we were noshing through this one Tupperware thing. We're like, why aren't any of us getting whacked? And then your wife comes out and goes, I don't think you guys are eating out of the right one. You're eating out of like the training wheels one, but
probably
anyway.
The best, honestly.
Probably. But we had a blast, and it was good to see everybody, Mr. Machado, Mr. Richer. Mm-hmm. Can always do better. You can never do better than Josh Richer.
No, we'll see. Maybe though soon.
I know.
Because, of course, we did mention episode 500. I guess we should reiterate it now so we don't forget later.
Right.
We are doing another trivia contest. It's open to all in the nation, whether you're a staff member, just a listener, or a fan of the site, whatever, and you want to be involved in the trivia tournament, just reach out to us and you can get involved. So that should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And you and I are thinking of some special moments, special events, special guests. Going to be tremendous. The big 500. But we're talking about this evening, JR, and of course we are back third straight show at the big haunt in Manhattan. But let us bring in the third member of our Trinity, JR, another debut this evening and another exceptional human being joining us. Who is it?
It's a very holy trinity tonight. This is a person I was I met in New Orleans, of course. WrestleMania weekend. She is fantastic. She is currently penning the Diva Deep Dive series at PlaceToBeNation.com. That's the rage of the internet. Of course, caught the eye of Melina last week. I don't know if she still does her podcast, but we can ask her. And she was recently a guest on an excellent edition of Talk and Pop So be sure to check that out on the PTBN Pop feed. And that is the one and only, my good, close, longtime personal friend, Stacey O'Loughlin. Stace, how are you tonight?
G'day. I am excellent this morning.
That's right. This
yeah.
I've never had that in high school. I guess you were parked at like 5 in the morning his time.
That's true, yeah. We're not used to different sides of the globe. But,
well, actually, hang on, Stacey. Is it 5:30 a.m. there?
It's not 5:30 a.m.
Well, how's the minus 3 work? I was pretty drunk when you explained it.
I take my time.
Oh, so it's 11.
And minus 3. And well, minus 2 from it, actually. It's 10.
Okay, 10. All right.
Ready.
Okay.
Sorry.
I get it now.
Yeah. Sorry. Minus 3 is central time because we were in Louisiana.
Oh, God. So many times to worry about.
I'm okay. Sorry to confuse. Yeah, Louis. Yeah, because, you know, we met in New Orleans, you know, as you know, that's Scott. Right. So.
Yes. Which means, Stace, as I do with every WrestleMania guest, since JR feels the need to have 14 straight of them, I will continue to do my due diligence. Number one. Were you there for the hidden group of karaoke singers or lack thereof? And why didn't you sing?
I was there. I mean, we hung out there like pretty much the whole weekend. We were there every night. Oh. I was there every night. I sang in the group. I did not sing on stage, and I had zero desire to sing on stage because I cannot sing.
Okay.
And I accept this about myself.
Okay. That's a fine, honest answer. I applaud that. Yeah. Once again, Johnny Hollywood, the only one who had the guts to go in front of the mic. Fair enough. Number
Hollywood.
Two.
Yes.
That was for you, JT.
Number two. Sorry. What did you think of Graham Cawthon's hair?
Graham Cawthon's hair is beautiful and luxurious and a delight to behold.
Okay. Better than Mark Claire's hair.
Oh, that's the question. But no, I'd still give it to Claire.
Yes.
Do you think JR? What's the tally so far that we've had? Do you think more people leaning towards Claire's than Graham?
I don't think Graham, have they?
I don't think. Jen?
I think Jen. Someone did.
I think Jen liked. I think Jen voted for Graham's hair. Mm. Number three. What did you think of the sheriff, Mr. Schirmacher, on Sunday? Did you meet him? What'd you think of Pete?
I must have met Pete at the tailgate.
Apparently he was hard to miss.
He's a force of nature. He's
hard to miss. Yeah, like I recognized him, and I'm sure I met him. I don't know that I necessarily had a conversation with him that day. He was nice. I met him, and he was nice. I can't say much more to that.
Okay.
You're doing well. He seemed to be
too strong. Unfortunately.
You're doing well. Now, what about
I didn't get to actually, like, talk one, like, properly to a lot of people just because it was a big group, you know, like,
okay,
anyway.
All right. And the final question, and this is the one I've been most waiting for because only you can answer it. Did my PIC enjoy sleeping in the bathtub? Or was he just at the front door like the guard dog watching the room?
Yeah, I left him out on the stoop.
Stacey and I bonded. That's all we need to know.
Oh, yeah. See? Now, I appreciate the bonding, but see? That's what I'm saying. The bonding. She says you were out on the stoop. You bonded. But exceptional. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Stace. I appreciate it. Very well done.
No worries. All right.
Now we can dive in. Now let's have some fun. All right. We're in the throes of an exceptional year of wrestling that is 19. Oh, before we do that, JR, yeah. Why don't we talk about the sad day in wrestling yesterday? Yeah. Sunday, not one, not two, but three.
Four, actually.
Four?
Yeah.
Four wrestling deaths. Mm-hmm. Number one, and this actually happened. We had a false alarm earlier in the week, but former NWA wrestler Brickhouse Brown passed away. He had cancer. Of course, last week, B. Brian Blair accidentally killed him before he was dead. And
Hazel's hunting up.
Yeah.
Honey hot, I should say.
Yeah, but he passed away. I didn't see his age, but he had been battling cancer for a while. So number two, of course, the very tragic apparent suicide of Too Sexy Brian Christopher / Brian Lawler. Very sad there because, I mean, he's obviously been troubled for many, many years. And so very sad there. Before we get to the last one, JR, what was the other one?
Independent wrestler Trevor Lee's father, Tracy Goodell, passed away as well. I know he was very involved, like in the indie scene in that area, you know, kind of mid-Atlantic area. So I can't say I'm super familiar with him. Obviously, Trevor Lee has been, you know, working in that area for quite a while. Very great reputation. It's a CWF Mid-Atlantic, kind of a heavy hitter there. So condolences to him on his loss as well. That seemed like it was pretty shocking. I guess came out of nowhere. So
right. Well, very sad. Very sad. Our prayers to the family. And finally, of course, the final one pertaining to our era here, JR, of our vintage vaults, and that is the great Nikolai Volkov passed away at the age of 70. They said what it was. Yeah.
I haven't seen anything actually come out.
All right. I haven't either. Okay. I'm trying to remember if we saw him. Was he at the con in Philly? I don't think he was, right? I don't think
I
so.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember. I remember seeing him a couple years ago at the con in Queens here when I got my picture with Sid and the Heenan family. I remember him being there, and he seemed fine. Anyway, passed away at the age of 70. And so we hope, and I know JR does as well, that shop.com does a commemorative red shirt with USSR across the front.
Obviously.
That would be fantastic. Sweater would be even better, but I have a feeling they're not going to go that far. they don't dive that deep into the thing.
But it was a tough day to see. To get, and they were all like rapid fire succession. At least at Brickhouse, everyone was pretty much ready for, because it was a rumor that he was close. But yeah, no, Nikolai and then Brian Christopher came out of nowhere. I guess they said Christopher, they kept him going long enough for Lawler to come there and say bye, before they you know, took him off life support or whatever. But yeah, it does look like he took his own life. He hung himself in jail. He'd recently been arrested, and he's obviously had a real tough go at it. There's a lot of stories of kindness about both Nikolai and Christopher, like just not much in the way of negativity at all. Just talking about how much those guys would go out of their way to help younger wrestlers and how kind they were to a lot of younger wrestlers and, you know, how they acted backstage and at conventions. There's a really cool story I read about Brian Christopher worked an indie show where they just got torched on the gate, like nobody showed up, and he actually returned like half of his money. He understood that the guy, you know, he's like, I've been in the business forever, and I know you guys, you know, took it on the chin tonight. Here, I'm going to give you some money back, you know, hook me up down the road, basically. So there's like a lot of stuff like that coming out about him. Obviously, you know, most remember him as part of Too Cool. Obviously, his biggest notoriety was 2000, and that's one of the things I've noticed a lot of, like on Twitter and the internet, is just how well revered he was for that run. Like, I think it kind of gets overlooked, but you almost forget just how big they were for that 6 to 7 months.
Yep.
So a lot of folks have talked about that, but obviously just really great in the USWA and Memphis area as well. Had you know, strong run there before even getting to the WWF. So yeah, it sucked to read that. You feel for Jerry Lawler, obviously, having his son battle so many demons and then to take his own life like that was rough. Stacey, what are your thoughts and memories of Christopher?
Well, I hate to say it, but I'm a bit too young for even for him. Like, I wasn't watching in 2000, so I really don't have a lot of...
You can technically be Scott's daughter, right? We can just throw that out there.
Technically.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know how old you are, Scott, but yeah. Yeah, no, I honestly don't have a lot of memories of Brian Chris. Like, I've seen, you know, a bit of Too Cool stuff watching back, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's sad, obviously. It's horrible, you know, that his life ended up like that. But yeah, no, in terms of wrestling, I mean, I've seen Too Cool. They were fun, but I don't really have a lot of memories beyond that, unfortunately.
And it's sad because right now on Main Event, while we're doing our TNA pay-per-view recap, old classic TNA recaps, and he was on for most of those first, I don't know, probably 10 or 15 were kind of mashing.
Yeah.
I feel bad. But I mean, at that time, he was probably a huge mess taking checks, and it's just it never ended for him. It's unfortunate that it got to this point. It feels like it's been going on since what, the end of 2000.
Well, he got fired for trying to smuggle the drugs over the border.
Yeah.
Then it was just one thing after another from there. He had the brief comeback and was like 04 for like a month.
Yep.
And then was gone again. But yeah, it's just in and out of the news constantly. They actually had that one. I had forgot about the one. Actually, we should call out Callum McDougall at PlayStation.com did a nice piece talking about Nikolai and Christopher's careers. So check that out. And
yes.
Shout out to Callum.
Yes.
He calls out, which I had forgotten, was Christopher's comeback in 2011 for the one night.
Yes.
During the Cole Lawler feud. Yeah. And,
yep.
He was.
Oh, yeah.
That was intense. Remember, he was out there like lighting up Lawler and everything. So, yeah, that was his final kind of appearance on the, well, actually, no, he was at Raw, old school Raw. He was there too. That was his last appearance.
Right.
He was with Scotty and Rikishi against three man band. So, that was his actual last appearance. It was early 14, but one of his last was that one with Lawler and Cole, which was crazy.
Yeah, I agree. So, and as for Nikolai, we'll obviously get more into him, JR, down the line when he gets to the end of his WWF run. But very sad and original. You know, even watching the All-Star Wrestlings on the network from even, you know, 78, 79, and some of those early MSG house shows from the late 70s when Bruno was champion and you know, great heel then too. Another topic for another day. Maybe somebody wants to do a written piece on it, but has 2018 been a tougher year for wrestling deaths than even 2017? Because we had a lot of rough ones last year too. Mm-hmm.
Every year is rough at this point, honestly.
Well, yeah, obviously. I mean, no, it's true. It is true. But, I mean, this year there was some big names. Obviously, the big, you know, all these were big names. Bruno and, you know, Vader. Well, last year we had a few big ones as well. So, interesting. But, yeah, no, I mean, obviously these guys aren't, a lot of these guys aren't getting any younger, unfortunately. So, all right. Back to the business at hand. June 25th, 1988, from our big building on 33rd. Known as Madison Square Garden in New York City. This was a Saturday, a very rare Saturday night MSG house show, which means there was a day night, there was a matinee. So a lot of these guys wrestled twice. So the only other show on this day that our man with the luscious hair, Mr. Cawthon, had on the history of WWE.com, the Baltimore Arena. So they were earlier in the day, they had a matinee at one of Vince's big haunts. 7,000 for the matinee. He only has four matches, but then I have an interesting news tidbit that you guys will like. The British Bulldogs took on Haku and High Chief Afi, of course, kind of the New Islanders, if you will. The Honky Tonk Man took on Brutus Beefcake for the Intercontinental title. He doesn't have a result. Demolition took on the Powers of, took on a new team, JR, that we'll talk about down the line, a debuting team that I believe was coming from the AWA. Kind of looks like Demolition, actually. We'll get more to them down the line. And your WWF World Champion, Mr. Randy Macho Man Savage, took on the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase early in the day. I wonder if the stipulation that they have on our show was the same there. Not sure. And listen to this little tidbit. After the show, King Haku. King. What is that all about? Haku was involved in an altercation with a man at the Safari Room of the International Hotel near the Baltimore-Washington International Airport. During the altercation, Haku bit the man in the nose.
Yes.
And he was later placed on probation.
Yeah, it's so a another legendary story when people talk about Haku's toughness.
Yep.
And you can read more about Haku in this week's PTBN Group Watch Champions piece. We did Uncensored 95. That was Miss Jennifer Smith's choice, and it was trash, even though she'll tell you otherwise. and yes, Haku as Ming took on Jim Duggan in a martial arts match. So,
yes,
enjoy that. But you should check out the piece; it was a lot of fun to do.
Yes.
Where the hell were you, Stacey, during that? By the way, you vanished.
I watched the show, but I had things on, and I forgot to actually do my write up and put it in. So that was my bad.
Yeah.
I know. I dropped the
bail
ball
on the crappy shows. I get you. That's fine.
No, well, I enjoyed it more than the last one. So.
That's true. We got to pick something really good for next month. We're on a rough stretch. So, all right, why don't
we should
talk
mix
about
it up and do a good show.
We should, absolutely. I'm going to come up with one.
Anyway.
All right, since our last show in May, we've had a lot go on. On the May 29th episode of Challenge, Greg Valentine debuted his new shin guard, the Heartbreaker, during his match against Mike Richards. On the 6-4-88 Superstars, Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with Jacques and Raymond Rougeau, where they said they were not like Dino Bravo. And to show their appreciation to the United States, they began waving two small American flags. But that should be everyone's. None of us are like Dino Bravo. We should all be proud of that. We should talk about it all the time.
Mm.
On 6-8, the Glamour Girls defeated the Jumping Bomb Angels in Saitama, Japan, to become the new women's tag team champions. On 6-11 Superstars, DeGeorge conducted an interview with Jake Roberts, where he introduced his wife, Cheryl, who said Rude was not man enough for her, or Jake Roberts. Sam Houston, Jacques, and Raymond Rougeau defeated Danny Davis, Chris Curtis, and Pete Sanchez at 3:29. Raymond pinned Curtis following a double-team move. After the bout, Sanchez was given a similar move, and Houston seemed confused why the Rougeaus attacked him. A week later, on the 18th, there was an update where it was announced that Rick Martel had suffered a concussion during a recent match against Demolition. Footage was then shown from 3/12 Saturday Night's Main Event match pitting Hulk Hogan against King Harley Race. It was announced that Race was injured during that match after he crashed into a table and he had abandoned his throne and has had an operation. Bobby Heenan was interviewed and said he was searching for a new king. Greg Valentine defeated Ricky Itachi via submission with the figure four. After the bout, Don Morocco and Billy Graham came to the ring to make Valentine break the hold. Morocco chased Jimmy Hart backstage while Valentine attacked Graham and put him in the figure four, sending him out in a stretcher. And later that night, the Big Boss Man made his WWF TV debut by pinning Louis Spicoli with a sidewalk slam. As well on that episode, which is apparently a very big one, the Rockers also made their re-debut. They were had shown up in 1987. They were fired after like one night, as the story goes. And they now be known as the Rockers, not the Midnight Rockers. So pretty big episode there. And like I said, pretty busy month because on 6/19 Challenge, the Brother Love Show debuted with special guest Bobby Heenan. And finally, on the 6/25 Superstars, which is earlier this day, Craig DeGeorge conducted an interview with Bobby Heenan, Andre the Giant, Rick Rude, and Hercules. They announced that Harley Race had been injured by Hulk Hogan, forced to vacate his throne, and Heenan led the crowd in a moment of silence and ten bell salute, and said he would guarantee there would soon be a new king. We also had an update segment with footage from the previous week with Billy Graham. It was announced that doctors had advised Graham to stay away from ringside and no longer manage Morocco, and he could only continue as a broadcaster. And you mentioned the Haku altercation. And this is also our boy Roger Kent's last appearance at MSG. So
thank God.
Soak in the glory of Mr. Kent.
Yes.
And so lots going on there. We'll talk about some of these debuts tonight, because this is also ends up being a pretty big MSG, Stacey, that you got for your much more important than many other ones that we've talked about.
Yes.
So, all right.
There she goes, soaking it in. All right.
Oh, sorry. I had a mute button problem. Anyway, go on.
All right, Scott, you ready?
Malfunction. Let us open the show, JR. Roger, our announcers, by the way, as you mentioned, Roger Kent in his final show, and superstar Billy Graham and Lord Alfred Hayes joins the table right after the first match starts. And the first match, JR, and the aforementioned debut that you just mentioned, which is?
The debut of the Big Boss Man taking on Scott Casey. Boss Man, born Ray Washington Traylor Jr. on May 2nd, 1963, former corrections officer in Cobb County, Georgia. Traylor debuted in 1985, initially working as enhancement talent for Jim Crockett Promotions under his real name. Seeing his potential head booker, Dusty Rhodes, pulled Traylor from TV for 12 weeks to repackage him as Big Bubba. Rogers, a silent bodyguard for Jim Cornette, who along with the Midnight Express is feuding with the James Boys. In 1987, Traylor joined UWF and won their heavyweight title from One Man Gang, who had left to join the WWF and then was later signed on here to New York. So, big debut upon us. And like I mentioned, he's battling old Scott Casey. Casey's still trucking along. Good heat for Boss Man, who's looking quite hefty. We'll track that as we move along. Graham's concerned about Boss Man wrestling and all this gear. He says it could be illegal. Lord Al shows up in the booth now as well. He gives us inside information on the Boss Man. Start with some stalling and caution on both ends as Casey's trying to figure out what Boss Man is all about. Casey makes the ref force Boss Man to take his cuffs off his belt, and then we get started. Boss Man controls the arm to start, grabs a bear hug as Graham says, when he gets sweaty, that gear gets soaked. It has 25 to 30 extra pounds. Boss Man keeps leaning on Casey, using all his weight to wear him down, work him over. Kent says Boss Man gets his ham hock in there as he fends off a Casey comeback, including a stiff backbreaker. Boss Man keeps working the back as the commentary keeps putting him over strong. Graham comments on the girth around his waist, saying he must be a size 56, brother. Casey comes back with a sleeper, but Boss Man quickly busts that up. A moment later, Boss Man crotches himself on the top rope, and Casey starts to unload, getting 2-1 across body. That flurry ends abruptly when Boss Man catches Casey, slams him down with his weight for the win. After the bell, Boss Man cuffs Casey, cracks, and chokes him with the nightstick. That was a fun little squash. Strong intro to the new character. I went 1.5 stars. I was entertained. And with a size 56 waist, I would say Boss Man's primed for the Scenic City Invitational hot dog eating contest that's going down next week. And I'm seeing this rage all on Twitter, so he should be good for that. So, Scott, what did you think of this match?
Your match time to open the show was 7:45. I thought it was okay. I mean, Graham went on this whole tirade about him being fat and everything, but he actually does not look as big as he would eventually get. I feel like he would get bigger. I don't think he was as big as we would see him down the line. But I thought the match was fine for what it was. I liked the whole gimmick with Scott Casey being upset about all the extra stuff that Boss Man was wearing, because it's kind of legit in a roundabout way. And I thought it was fine. Scott Casey's a decent hand. I mean, he can, you know, get the job done. I gave it I matched you. I gave it a star and a half. No manager yet for Boss Man.
Nope.
But I dug the gimmick. Something different. And I thought about this because when we've had our man, Mr. D'Amato, on, he always mentions how Southern gimmicks never work in the North when you're a babyface. Kind of like he always mentions, we always talk about Sam Houston, how like cowboy gimmicks don't really fly when you're in the Northeast. But as a heel, that's how it works perfectly, because here's this heel, you know, Southern corrupt, you know, prison guard who roughs
shitty
people up and everything.
Probably.
Shitty internet. Yeah. Yes, of course. Stupid hotel room Wi-Fi. And it works now. So you're so Mr. D'Amato is exactly right. And now here it works in your favor because he's a dastardly heel, mm-hmm, working the whole Southern gimmick. So it worked perfectly here. And I like the whole psychology of he's got the strap and the badge and all the stuff on the belt. And, you know, Scott Casey was a little hesitant to get in the ring. But the match was fine. Again, your time, 7:45, decent length for an opener. And he was, you know, served its purpose, Stacy. Boss Man makes an auspicious debut, and he'll get better as time progresses. Not a bad match. What'd you think?
Yeah, pretty much echoing you guys. It was a good little squash to introduce him. Like, my favorite part of it was Superstar Graham shitting on him for being fat.
He really turned
into hilarious.
Yeah.
He really did. And then on the other hand, he was looking at Scott Casey and being like, oh, well, he's got a sweet tan. He's going to be really hard to beat today. Like, because he has a tan. Like, it's great, man. But yeah. I think it's my first time seeing Scott Casey, who, like, with that hair and that mustache, looks like Jake Roberts' younger brother. But he channeled his issues into training at the gym instead of drinking. But yeah, no, but it was a fun little squash. Like, Boss Man, I liked his punches. He had nice punches. And yeah, it was basically really, and I did like the stuff they did with the gimmicks too, like his outfit and then taking them off. And then I liked, I think it was Lord Owl, like, wondering how he's going to wrestle in such a bulky uniform and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it did its job.
Yeah,
and I said a star and a half too, so.
Very good.
I like how Alfred's like, or was it? It was Billy Graham. The only time Boss Man ever go to the gym is to arrest somebody. It's like, all right, we get it. He's fat. Move on.
He's at McDonald's all the fucking time, though, brother.
My favorite bit was when, like, Boss Man bent over to, like, put a hold on or something, and I could see his gut hang out, and immediately Graham was just like, oh my god, look how hefty he is. And, like, he was just looking at his fat gut.
Sadly, for Graham, Boss Man with a size 56 waist bumped and moved around the ring better than he ever fucking did.
Yeah, exactly.
And no one has arthritic hips.
There we go. I guess Graham's still alive, so maybe he wins.
So it's five.
I thought Boss Man did a good job getting himself over, and I thought the commentators, besides Graham, I thought Kent and Lord Al really did a nice job getting over the gimmick. They talked a lot about his past and, you know, how, like, basically what he brings to the ring. So I thought they did a good job making him seem important and getting him over out of the gate. You can tell on these shows, Scott, when there's a guy that debuts that they're probably not seeing too much in versus a guy like this that, you know, they have some plans for, by how much the commentary really gets into him. You know, like, we've seen,
yes,
you know, random one-offs pop up here and there, like Brad Ringens and guys like, you know, like guys like that. You know, they're new and they're getting talked about, but then you get the guy Boss Man with this really putting him over and talking about his gimmick and focusing on it. So you can see the difference there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You could tell this is a guy that's legit. It wasn't some dopey thing like, you know, Chief Siviafi thing. I mean, this was a guy that was going to be taking the time and move ahead with a good, with a solid run based on the commentary. So Boss Man gets the opening win on our show this evening.
All right, let's go to our next match, which is a tag team affair featuring, mm-hmm, those fabulous Rougeau brothers that we mentioned earlier in the notes, taking on the Conquistadors. Rougeaus, of course, have been hamming it up a little bit more lately. We'll get some of that here. This is a rematch from December, slightly different twist, as Rougeaus continue to antagonize everyone with their foe Americana. Rougeau's wearing full pants this month, too. They've eschewed the tights.
Yeah, I thought that was odd. It was different. It kind of came out of nowhere. Weird.
Ken says the fans are bulging in the rafters and says they're not buying the Rougeau's act. Ray starts off with one of the conquistadors. We get some trading of offense as the crowd is cheering the Rougeaus early. Graham gives thoughts as to why masked wrestlers are hiding as Jacques comes in and cranks a headlock. Billy also asks if masks are a Mexican thing, and Al says he doesn't know if they're from Mexico, Guadalupe, or Guatemala. So, rough to a strong start here. The Rougeaus start working the leg and sneak in some low shots as well, quietly working some heel actions. Jacques eventually gets thrown over the top, and the conquistadors stomp and punch away, mix in a nerve hold, but really not much other variance in their offense. The crowd's a bit mixed. They're rallying the Rougeaus. Jacques eventually works free and lands a drop kick, but gets cut right back down by a forearm. He survives and makes the hot tag, and the crowd is all fired up. Ray runs through both conquistadors with some anger. Jacques tags back in and hits a back elbow for two. We get an abdominal stretch so Ray can flip around and showboat. Hits a savate kick for two. Things break down. The Rougeaus finish things with Le Bomb for a big pop. Kent was mixing up the Rougeaus all throughout the match, by the way, which I thought was funny. He had no clue who the fuck was who. I thought it was a rock-solid tag team. It was proficient, had some good heat, and just nothing more, nothing less. The Rougeaus have certainly freshened themselves up, though. And I like that they slowly burn through this turn. They're not pushing anything. They're just slowly working in more and more smarminess, more and more Americana, and more just, you know, faux sincerity. So I've really dug that. And they're still over, and they put them in there with a heel team to keep it hammered home that they're not really heels yet, but they're getting mixed reactions more and more. So I went 2.5 with this one, Stace.
Yeah. I found this confusing. And so, like, halfway through it, I figured it out. Because, like, I haven't been watching this stuff. I don't know the context as much. And, like, I just figured the Rougeaus were heels. Because I always know them as heels. And because they come out with the American flags and, like, being ridiculous. So I think halfway through, once I figured out that it wasn't just a big heel in peril segment, it was actually that the Rougeaus were supposed to be their faces. And then Ray made that big hot tag. You know, I figured it out. But yeah, like you say, it was a really good tag match. And I have a lot of time for the Rougeaus brothers. Mm-hmm. I think they're very, very good. And I enjoy them in the ring, and I enjoy all their sort of shenanigans and stuff. The conquistadors are good once you get past the fact that they're giant gold condoms. but it's good. And yeah, I really enjoyed the hot tag and Raymond running wild at the end. And yeah, so I said 2.5 as well. Yeah, it was fun.
Shocking they were on the same page, Stacey.
It's weird.
Right down to the condoms.
Exactly.
Wow.
Go ahead, Scott.
I knew you'd try to fill the innuendos in. No, I'm just kidding. You know, Stacey, it's funny you say that about the whole, like, you were a little confused in the beginning, because I agree with you, JR, about, like, because at first I'm like, why do we have two heels going against each other? And I got a little confused at first. But yes, you're right that we're not pushing it as much. But here's a problem. I feel like the crowd is catching up to it faster than WWE is trying to push it. Because obviously the crowd's already shitting on them as heels, which is fine because that's obviously the end game here. But obviously the company is still trying to make them faces, which is why they were facing the conquistadors. But I feel like it killed the heat of the match because the fans are already in on the joke, I guess you could say. And the WWF is trying to do this, mm-hmm. but they're not going fast enough. And the crowd is already catching up to it. And I feel like a good hunk of, and Alfred calls it out multiple times in the match. You know, I'm so confused. What's going on? Booze, cheers, booze. So I agree with you that, yes, obviously they're trying to slow burn this, but in defending Stacey's comment, the crowd, I think, is catching up to it too fast, and the Rougeaus are already getting booed. So I was a little confused, and I figured – I think at this point, I don't know how much longer they were planning on going with it, but I'm sure they pretty much did it full-blown soon because, the crowd, like, yet you had the conquistadors who were already heels. Then you got the Rougeaus who the crowd already realizes are you know, smarmy pricks. So they're already booing them too, even though they're technically still supposed to cheer them, even though they're not going to. So I feel like that kind of killed a little of the energy of the match. Having said that, I thought the match was actually pretty good. Your runtime, 11:35, so they got a decent amount of time. I gave it 2 stars, a little less than you guys, but it still was pretty good, but I think the half star for me down is because of the fact that the WWF is trying to still book them as pseudo faces, and we're all supposed to be like not in on the joke, but clearly the crowd's not that dumb and they're already booing them. So I feel like the whole point of this being real heels against sort of heels, but not really yet, kind of killed the energy level.
I don't think it matters if the crowd is in, if they're already past it or not, because just the evolution of the characters there. Like, I'm glad they didn't rush it just because they were already getting booed. And again, you know, we're getting an extremely small sample size here at Madison Square Garden, where the fans are obviously notoriously a touch smarter, you know, smarter
sure.
than most. Like,
no,
so, you know, how is this getting over in wherever, you know,
right.
somewhere
no,
else in America? So, but
right.
no, I get your point. The fans are picking up on it. It can be confusing. But I'm kind of okay with it. Like, I'm, you know,
right.
like, I'm glad they're not altering the pace of it just because. Like, I think they're pacing it nicely. Because it almost makes it better, because they're like, why are you booing these guys? They really haven't done anything quite yet. I think that's what Al's trying to get across, right? Like,
right.
why are they booing them? And, I mean, unless you're really looking for the nuance of it, like, it may not catch your eye, some of the little stuff they're doing. They may be showboating a bit more. But if you're not really on the up and up, or you're not, you know, proficient in the sarcasm of it all, you may think that, you know, kind of, why are they getting booed? So I can kind of see, I think they're about halfway there, and I'm
right.
enjoying it for sure. This is the most exciting they've been probably since they first debuted, Scott. A lot of stuff we've seen for them as faces has been kind of bland.
No, I agree with you 100%. And I mean, and Alfred and Superstar was pretty much saying, you know, Alfred, these, if you see them, they're disingenuous, they're lying through their teeth, kind of thing. Like, he's, I don't know if Superstar was going too far, pushing it too far, and not
right.
meaning to, or, but in any event, I mean, the match I thought was fine. I mean, obviously, I think we knew one half of the Conquistadors. I don't know if Jose Luis was one of them. I don't remember who the other one would have been, but I thought the match was fine, and it kind of picked up in the last like minute or so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have tried. I'm saying that I don't know what their plan was, when to fully pull the trigger, but it was obvious here that this crowd already realizes it. And it was, you know, it's just a matter of time before they see where they go with it. But, I agree with you. I mean, the almost from the beginning, the Rougeau's, face run was pretty lousy, probably because there were already some good baby faces anyway.
Yeah, I don't know if it's even lousy. It was just kind of boring. I mean, that's
yeah,
more than
just
anything, so.
Rough.
So, all right,
and they're just better as heels.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, I agree with you, Stacey, and I think they figured that out at that point. So, 2 stars for me. And again, your runtime is 11:35. I am looking forward to this next match.
Oh, God,
I'm very curious for Stacey's comments on this one.
Why must we do this again? The big rematch from last month is Georgie Animal Steel takes on poor Greg the Hammer Valentine. No DQ stip this time, playing off that finish that we didn't need either of these matches. We didn't need the original or the rematch. Steel has mine with him, and the crowd seems happy to see him, but they can all go fuck themselves. We get some teasing between Hammer and Graham until Steel attacks from behind and drives Greg outside. The Animal follows, and Hammer bangs on him out there until Graham is ripping Hammer for what he did to him recently. Al calls Hammer shin guard a device of torture, and Graham blames him for being forced into the commentary booth. Hammer keeps whacking away at Steel, dropping a chair on his back on the floor. Steel recovers. We get some stalling and some bullshit until Steel starts biting the shin guard and calf. Hammer kicks mine, and Steel comes to the rescue as the crowd is just rabid for everything. All night, by the way. Not even just here, but all night. Steel comes, charges, but comes up empty and hits the post. Hammer clubs away. Steel blocks the figure four with a thumb to the eye and then a kick. They tussle around a bit more as Steel fucks around with mine and then wander around ringside until the bell just randomly rings. And we find out that apparently Steel won by countout. Just a real stupid mess. I'll give it like a smidgen better than last month, just because of the stip and because of Billy Graham's anger, which kind of cut carried things. It was really all about just him just torching Valentine throughout this whole match. The mind stuff was fucking terrible. If you want him to sell dolls, just have him come out during intermission or something and throw him into the crowd. Like, we don't need a match. Just a real dumb waste of Valentine. I am so more than done with George Steel. We've seen more than enough of him. So I'm going 0.5 star just because of Valentine's effort and the stip and Graham. But fuck, I am just done with all the shit, Scott.
I am too. 0.5 star. Your match time, 6 minutes and 35 seconds of life that we will never get back. What's funny, JR, is I've been watching some of the superstars in between our two house shows, and they were pumping this feud up nationally on the fucking Cindy's. It's absolutely dreadful.
Oh,
they wasted
God.
Cindy time on this feud, which is even worse. Absolutely worse. I don't understand. Obviously, it is evident that these guys can't figure out no DQs. Why would you have a no DQ match yet still have a countout step? Yeah. I mean, come on, guys, wake the frick up. I mean,
it's
seriously.
It's written in Uncensored 95.
Oh, God. Maybe they should have these two in the back of a truck, in the back of a moving truck.
Yeah, and drive it off the fucking cliff. Sacrifice yeah. Greg Valentine if it means we have to get rid of George Steele.
Get rid of Steele.
Actually, you know what, Scott, too? This might be the last time we see him. Oh, I guess he'll be back for us eventually on pay-per-view and stuff, but I'm not seeing him at another MSG, so we might be done for a while.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, this is it.
I mean, they tried to make it entertaining, but I mean, seriously, and we've talked about this. Greg Valentine is just such a superior, you know, guy on this roster that why are we wasting time? Seriously, why are we wasting time with this bullshit? Like, why are we wasting time with Valentine? Poor Valentine having to deal with this fucking schlub. We got dolls now. I mean, really? Dolls? Good grief. Were we even in the Norman the Lunatic range yet in NWA with the fucking the teddy bears, whatever the hell he was carrying around? I mean, this is just nonsense. We're at the point now. We're at the point now in the WWF. We bullshit. Plenty of good guys on this roster. This roster is slowly getting bigger, slowly getting better, and we need to get rid of this trash and start working the guys that are really, you know, really over and really you know, working great matches, because this is just crap. I'm sorry. Why does he have to not? First of all, why does Greg Valentine have to lose? And secondly, why are we protecting George Steele at all? I mean, seriously, Valentine should have just, you know, if they're doing this whole storyline with Valentine and Graham and Morocco, and we'll get more into that in the next match. Why are we having George Steele get fucking protected? Really? Come on. I mean, this is outrageous to have this guy protected. Seriously, protected? Give me a break. Utter crap, Steve.
Protected with a golden condom.
Protected with two giant golden condoms. Half star, Stacy, and an utter waste of time.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like, I was so excited when Greg Valentine came out, because I love the Hammer. Like, he's a great worker. I love him. And then fucking George the Animal Steel comes out after it. I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go. And, yeah, no, I hated this. This is bullshit. Like, for real, I'm sorry. Like, even, like, I mean, I enjoy bullshit in wrestling. Like, stupid comedy, stuffed doll kind of bullshit. I enjoy that. I enjoy Santino. I enjoy, you know, the blow-up doll in Japan. I, like, watching the Invisible Man win a battle royal was, like, one of my favorite parts of New Orleans, Scott. But I love that kind of bullshit, like, comedy bullshit, whatever. But this sucked. Like, this is just actually bad. And George the Animal Steel is horrid. And the doll was stupid. And this whole thing was just a piece of shit. And a complete fucking waste of Greg Valentine. I agree. I hated this.
Be honest with you, what I would have done, and I'll get more into it when we do the next match, I would have flip-flopped the heel in the next match here and put Greg Valentine in the next match, is what I would have done. And then you could have done with – well, I'll leave it at that. But there you go. It's utter trash. What do we got next year?
Yeah.
So actually, these two guys aren't done with each other, because in 2008, they co-starred in a short film called Something Fishy, which two former wrestlers purchased a fishing camp, served as the pilot for a comedy series that was not further developed.
Wow, I can't believe why. I'm stunned. Jeez, I'm stunned why it wasn't.
So this is his last MSG appearance. We're not going to see him again, Scott. He's around until August. He gets diagnosed with Crohn's disease late in the year. Becomes a road agent until October of 90, and then gets rehired as an agent until the late 90s. And, of course, we'll see him again as an on-air character in 1998. So we're not completely done with the Animal, but we're due for a long break. And look,
I'm completely done with the Animal.
And I mean, I get the nostalgia for him if you grew up with him. I know he was a more vicious heel and a star early on, but by this point, it's this complete diminishing returns to me. And again, if you want to have him around, just have him be an act in the crowd, come out during a time in between matches. Like, we don't need him actually wrestling at this point, or at least not on, like, stuff like this. Like, whatever. If you want to throw him out there, you know, in the middle of nowhere for cards, whatever. But you're selling out MSG with big matches. You don't need to stick him in the other card at this point. I'm just, I don't want to watch it, and I don't think it'll care about me back then, but whatever. I can't imagine too many of the people did. All right, that's enough. Up next, we have another interesting match, and that is The Rock, Don Morocco, taking on Dangerous Danny Davis, who apparently has survived his ugly head injury from Saturday's main event. He's in action here against the always steady Morocco, who's been a bit aimless until his Valentine feud. Davis attacks at the bell. Morocco levels him and sends him to the floor. Billy Graham's gushing over Morocco and all he's done to help the superstar. Him and Kent called this a major mismatch, and basically to say Davis has no chance. Morocco toys with Davis a bit, throwing him around the ring with ease. Davis bails and is all upset at Morocco as he mocks him from the ring. Rock works his side headlock and yanks on Davis' hair and slaps him around. Davis is just a mess here. Finally goes to the eyes and gets a brief glimmer of hope, but Morocco just swats him down and hammers away some more. Morocco eventually sets up the inverted pile driver to a big pop, but Greg Valentine, thank you, attacks and beats him down for the DQ. Billy Graham's pissed, but he can't get involved after he's been barred from ringside. Hammer and Davis batter Morocco, and Al and Kent do whatever they can to keep Graham in a seat until Hammer comes over and smacks him and kicks his leg, which pissed off Al. He did not look like that at all. Morocco makes a save and chases Hammer off. I thought this was a fun squash. The crowd was really engaged, and the finish was great, too, because it gives these two guys something to do, some focus, gets Valentine away, the fuck away from Steel, and it gives Morocco a quality feud with a great wrestler. So I thought that was cool. And again, basic squash, but a hot segment. I went a half a star, and I continue to enjoy Face Morocco, which I cannot believe, Stacey.
Yeah, well, the fashion in this match is just killing me, by the way. Like, Danny Davis with his garish stripy pants and that low-cut shirt with his cleavage out, like, my God. And then Don Morocco, whose shirt, I have a backpack in the exact same style as the tie-dye shirt that he has, which is just blowing my mind a bit.
That's awesome.
Face Morocco is not someone I've seen a lot of, actually, but I kind of enjoyed this. Like once Morocco, like, did that nifty little drop toe hold thing at the start, that was, like, already more wrestling than I'd expected out of this match. So, yeah, it was good. And, like, Morocco, like, rolling around and, like, making fun of his, like, somersaults and all that and, like, mocking it. Like, I enjoyed that stuff. And my favorite part of the whole thing was superstar Billy Graham at one point saying, "You cannot penetrate the man." I now don't remember fucking why, but that's what he said. So,
without the conquistador's gold condom, you cannot penetrate the Rock, brother.
Now we know.
Yeah.
Morocco's a top. But it was a fun little squash, and then they did the angle with Hammer, so, like, at least he finally has something far more interesting to do, it seems, than George the Animal Steel. And I think the angle with Billy Graham was good because, yeah, he'd been talking the whole time about how, you know, I want to back him up but I can't, and Hammer just, like, coming in and pushing his buttons, and it's just like, oh. And then, yeah, when he kicked his leg, I was like, oh, dude, like, even I was just like, ah, you mean person, go away. Like, yeah, so it was good. It was a good angle and good little squash thing. I said a star and a half.
I gave it a half a star. No time on this match, not that it really matters. I would have just switched, flip-flopped these heels. I would have put Danny Davis in the fucking George Steele shit show because nobody gives a fuck about either of them, and make it some shitty throwaway match, and Steele can get a clean win and nobody'd fucking care. And then I would just have Valentine wrestle Morocco here, have a great match, beat the shit out of each other, and continue the thing in the back end with Hammer kicking Graham's leg. You could have done all of that while having a better match. That's what I would have done. Having said that, we didn't get that, and this was a perfectly fine squash. I like to think that this was leading towards a Valentine-Morocco feud, which would be kind of cool, considering they were, like, two of the greatest heels in the mid-'80s, you know, a few years earlier, and now, you know, in Morocco, JR, what the fuck happened? Like, where do we get this from? Are we, like, on some weird alternate universe? Like, why are we loving this?
I don't know if he was just bored and for a while it was just his gimmick, right? And then I think he just got kind of bulky and lazy. But for whatever reason, the face turn has really reinvigorated him. And it's not like he's having great matches. I mean, I think he's probably topped at like 2.5 for us. But his energy in the matches, his selling, the way he pinballs around and bops around, has just been kind of infectious. Like, he just brings a cool energy to the ring that I just did not remember at all. So it's been kind of neat to see.
Yeah, I don't remember it either. It's amazing. And of course, you know, we're all like, oh, you know, he's medicinally enhanced or whatever. But that really hasn't even mattered. I mean, he's doing good with the babyface comebacks. He even seems like his offense is a little more spry. I mean, I don't know what it is, but he's been really fun to watch. And, obviously behind the scenes, they must have told Billy Graham, look, you're a mess. you can barely walk. We can't risk you have somebody like fall on you and something happen with your hips or whatever. So they obviously relegated him to this. But what a great job by the Hammer to keep that storyline going, because he's just good at it. And this match itself is nothing. Danny Davis just collateral damage, which is why I think they should have just flip-flopped the heels and had Danny Davis just eat some shitty pin to George Steele in a crap match if they really wanted to put him over, and then just have Hammer and Morocco put on a really solid 2.5 stars, maybe even squeeze it to 3 if Hammer could really get something out of him, and then work the angle with the leg kick later, you know? I don't have a problem with that either. I think that might have been a better way to go about
it. Did they not do that much in the future? Because that's what it looked like they were going to do off that, because
I'm sure they can't put
Graham in. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to look at some of the other house show loops and obviously we'll have to see what they do on our next when we're back here in July and see if they do it. But
they definitely started doing it throughout July. It's at the Boston Garden July 9th. Yeah. So yeah, I'm sure it's you're right. Yeah. So they're making the circuit.
Yeah. And I agree with you guys about Morocco, because like I said, I wasn't expecting anything from him, and he actually did impress me with what he actually was doing in the ring. So yeah, I'm co-signed.
Mm. So there you go. The match itself is crap, but the angle advancement is good, and Hammer's just so good at what he does, and Morocco's really been good at what he does. But I think, you know, now I think this is a turning point for Morocco, because I think having Billy Graham at his side has kind of helped him advance the babyface thing. But now without him, we'll see if it continues. Speaking of baby faces, big one coming up next here, JR.
Big ol' Haas match as Hacksaw Jim Duggan taking on One Man Gang. Of course, Battle of Mid-South Legends. Good spot here, both men getting that Haas battle in. Gang sliding back down after his boost up after Mania. Duggan's in the land of the Giants as we speak. Gang using Jive Soul Bro. It's just so beautiful. He's solo again, though, without Slick this month. Duggan gets a huge pop as he marches out. Kent says that they adore him and he could win a presidential election right now. I think he could probably win one in 2020 as well. Would not shock me at this point. Graham's still ranting on the Hammer as Duggan plays to the fans. We finally get going as Duggan unloads a flurry of shots to the jaw. Gang shakes it off. Graham and Al talk about how much he's missing Slick out there. Duggan wrecks Gang with a nasty stiff clothesline that sent bent Gang backwards. Gang convalesces on the floor as Kent calls the ref an impish lad. Gang returns and we get some good stalemate collisions until Duggan takes over it with more hard strikes. Gang turns the tide by slinging Duggan to the corner and hammering away. Gang cuts a comeback off by going to the eyes, slowly works Hacksaw over, battering the arm. Gang keeps wrenching and bending the arm, but the announcers say Hacksaw won't give up. Of course, Jim Duggan does not give up, even if the hair is standing on the back of his neck. Gang keeps taking some hard right hands, eventually is staggered, and then misses a charge in the corner. Duggan comes right back with a three-point stance and gets the clean win, which surprised me. Graham thinks that Slick may get fired for not being there tonight and Gang losing. Surprising finish. Fun big match. Big man match. Has slowed a bit with the arm work, but overall was pretty good when they were tossing the bombs. And it's a big win for Duggan, which was smart because it shows that he can beat a big man. I think that's the whole reason they had this, to further his feud with Andre and to show that he can beat a man of this size. So I thought that was some shrewd booking there. And I enjoyed, you know, this is in my alley, just big bomb throwing. So I went 2 stars, Scott.
Yeah, this was not as bad as I anticipated. I gave it 1.5 stars, which for me, for a Duggan match, is generous. I mean, he is really over. I'm not going to deny that. I mean, the crowd is totally into him. And your match time, by the way, 9:49. So they gave him a decent amount of time for two guys you wouldn't think would should go 10 minutes. But obviously, this is a big deal because we haven't seen, I mean, other than Hogan, JR, I don't think we've seen a clean gang loss. So this is kind of a big deal, you know? Right? I don't think we've seen, no, right? I don't think we've seen a clean gang loss anywhere.
Well, Savage
beat him, or anywhere else. So
Savage beat him clean, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, Savage did. That's true. So the only two clean losses we've seen was Hogan, which is not a not a punishment, and your world champion. So not a, not that bad. So to have him lose clean here is a big deal. It means Duggan is a guy that's very well, you know, well on his way. So that push continues. Other than that, not much more. The power match, you know, it's pretty good power. I mean, there's really not much more to say. I mean, Duggan puts Gang how do I rephrase that? Gang puts Duggan over, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And he's really just, I mean, he's lapping everybody. I mean, we've seen a lot of baby faces leave the company, the, you know, like Steamboat and a lot of these guys. And Duggan's slowly moving up the ladder. Obviously, JYD sliding down the card. Duggan right now, you could argue, with Hogan kind of off the shelf, obviously, you have Savage at the top, but you know you could put Duggan up there with Jake or even even Beefcake. I wouldn't even put Duggan over Warrior at the moment in terms of over baby faces for the moment. I mean that obviously will change as we move on, but Duggan's like I mean pretty. If you can get a pop like that from the Garden, you're in like Flynn. So I will give props to Duggan here. He is over. And again, Stacey, a clean pin over a guy like Gang, who other than really losing to legit main eventers has not been beaten clean, you know, says a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, he seemed pretty over to me. I mean, but I'm sort of, I just expected Duggan to be that over, I guess, because that's how I remember him from that time. But this was another match. I said 2 stars, but this is another match that I actually enjoyed a lot more than I thought I would going in. Cause I'm not super high on Duggan really. In WWF at least. But it was kind of good, you know, like, yeah, like he got bumped around a little bit early and then he sort of made a bit. I really liked that long, it sounds weird, but I really liked the long armbar thing that they had going on because it took a lot of time.
Right.
But they worked it well. Like Hacksaw kept sort of trying to come back from it and get up and then go back down and then just the way they worked it was really good, I thought. And then, yeah, and his big comeback and that big one wind up punch that like wobbled him. It was so good. And then the big tackle finish. So yeah, it was like a fun match. It was sort of exactly what it needed to be worked like. And yeah, I enjoyed it enough. So yeah, it was good.
All right. And, let's see coming up next. We're going to see more Duggan shortly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we go backstage. Yeah. With some interviews. Lord Al's with Bobby Heenan, who talks about Andre the Giant's big match with Bam Bam Bigelow tonight, says the Bammer's in trouble. Al also teases Bobby about his big match later with the Ultimate Warrior, and Bobby talks tough. Al's in with Don Morocco, says his life now has a purpose, because every day is Valentine's Day, thanks to Hammer's recent actions. Now, this is a pretty good dark promo. Real fired up for Morocco, has been triggered by what's happened to Billy Graham. Although it was, I felt kind of sad. He says, my life finally has meaning and purpose. So we just kind of go through the motions before poor Don.
That was some dog shit, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I now have a purpose. But it was a good promo. We don't see from Morocco that much these days, so I enjoyed that. As with the Rougeaus, Ray clarifies they're there to alleviate confusion. And what was a funny jab at Kent, I thought. I meant to be reading into it, but they then talk about how all the fans cheer for them and that they love the fans and the support. Jacques talks about their pregnant sister in Miami and says they're coming to the United States soon as well. I thought this was an awesome promo. I fucking loved this. The smarminess, the fake sincerity. What I thought was the shot at Kent. The stuff with the sister. Like, Jacques is just so schmaltzy about it. I really, really like this promo. I thought it was really, really good. You guys agree?
Yes. Yeah, they were definitely
the bit about Jacques' sister. Yeah, the random non sequitur about my pregnant sister in Miami. Like, it's just the randomest shit. No, it's great.
It's like proof.
Like, said, like the yeah, the more they get towards being heels, like the better they get because they're so like they're so goofy, but they're great.
It's like, they're trying to prove how much they love America as their pregnant sister lives in Miami. It's like so ridiculous. Like, we really love America. Our sister lives there and she's having a baby there. Al's in with the Warrior, who says he has a lot of tricks up his sleeves and talks to the New York City area Warriors. So those are our promos, Scott. So why don't we take a break? We're about halfway through the show. We've got some big matches still to come. Stacey, how are you enjoying things so far?
I'm enjoying them very well, thank you. This is good.
Excellent.
Digging the show.
Oh, not bad so far. Yeah, I mean, other than the George Steele shit. If there's one person, I guess, in this stretch that I can hate more than Duggan, it's actually George Animal Steele. And Duggan actually maybe, you know, came off pretty good. But we got a lot of big big stuff coming up after this. But first, some words. Here, there, and everywhere. Because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place for Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceforNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceFanation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceFanation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceFanation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is the King of the Mountain, Jeff Jarrett, the founder and president of Global Force Wrestling, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back looking at the June 1988 Madison Square Garden house show. Myself, Scott, and Stacey Loughlin is on our book tour coming off that big Molina press, working the circuit, did Talk and Pop, and now here at Place to Be Nation, Place to Be Podcast. So it's been great to have you here, Stace. And, of course, like we mentioned, you and I go all the way back to New Orleans earlier this year. If you remember a guy called Rusev, we were singing a lot about him. Do you recall that?
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, whatever happened to him?
It's funny, every now and then, Yeah by Usher comes on the radio, and this, I just like immediately just like have to pause. It was like Desperado from the Seinfeld episode. Yeah. I look to the sky, and all I can just picture is Rusev Day. You know, it's takes me
I
back.
I pop every time. Yeah.
It's tough. You know, every time I hear that foolish beat, all I can think is, I want to go back to New Orleans and sing about Rusev. But alas, here we are talking Madison Square Garden instead. And speaking of foolish beats, that is the number one song in the nation this week. Of course, sung by Debbie Gibson. And here to talk more about other foolish beats that were hot at this point is Scott Criscolo and the Place to Be Nation podcast, whatever the fuck it is. Pop Culture Corner.
You're beating foolishly. Thank you, JR. All right, number one again is Foolish Beat. As since this show was on a Saturday, the newest Billboard Top 40 came out on this day. So we are right on the – not often we get to actually hit it other than when we have a Science Main Event. So, yes, Foolish Beat by Debbie Gibson is your number one song in the country. At number two, another great cut from Bad, and that is Michael Jackson with Dirty Diana. Pretty good cut. Number three
– talking about my wife.
My wife, son of a bitch. Number three, Together Forever by Rick Astley. So the backup, the second tune from after the Rick Roll. Number four, Make It Real by the Jets.
So we're going to do this five, season the, with Sam Darnold, baby.
That's right. Big money.
Make It Real.
Number five, The Flame by Cheap Trick. Let's hope Darno doesn't be flame out with all this money. Jerk. Number six, The Valley Road by Bruce Hornsby and The Range. I've never even heard of that song. Number seven, One More Try by the awesome George Michael. Number eight, Alphabet Street by Prince. There's an unheralded Prince cut right there. Number nine, Mercedes Boy by Pebbles. I vaguely remember that song. Stacey's like, what the hell? Who the hell? Who's Pebbles? And number 10 is, look at this one, Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. Of course, the second single off of the Hysteria album. Stacey, any of those 10 songs ring a bell whatsoever?
Well, thank God for Def Leppard, because up until that point, I literally do not know any of those songs. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
If you walk into any bar in Worcester, you will hear Pour Some Sugar on Me within the first 15 minutes.
Pretty much.
Yeah, Pour Some Sugar on Me, I know, but that's about it.
Or any...
Yeah.
No, go ahead. Sorry, what you were saying?
I was just going to say, I am utterly useless at the PTBN Greatest Song of the 80s tournament, because I look at the list and I recognize like two of the songs, and I'm like, oh, okay. So I'd have to do a lot of studying to participate in this thing. So well, I'm not good on the 80s.
That's a great segue, Stacey. Because why don't we talk about that?
Segue.
Yes.
Beautiful. Greatest Song of the 80s tournament, Scott, like we did mm-hmm. last time we were together and like we've done some other podcasts. So why don't we quickly levy some votes here? Three new pods sure. dropped today, three new groups, A-H, A-I, and A-J styles. So check those out, and we're going to vote here on air, and we'll see who's winning. All right, here's the 10, and then we'll vote. Rhythm Nation, Janet Jackson, Only Time Will Tell, Asia, Never Let Me Down, Depeche Mode, Can You Feel the Beat, Lisa Lisa and the Cult's Jam, Where Is My Mind, The Pixies, Open Arms, Journey, Video Killed, The Radio Star, The Buggles, Everybody Have Fun Tonight, Wang Chung, Going Back to Cali, LL Cool J, and The Look by Roxette. Stacey, any of these jump out at you as musts? Do you know any?
Yes. I know a couple, but the one that jumped out at me is The Pixies. Okay. Where Is My Mind? I love that song.
Well, we're putting that in then, in our vote here tonight. Scott, any of yours must?
Oh, you have to put The Buggles. I mean, it's the video that fired up MTV. First video ever played, so I would put that. Open Arms by Journey. Definitely.
LL.
Yeah, Rhythm Nation.
So to me, it comes down to, I got to put LL in. So I think when I voted, I don't think I had the Pixies, but I had Wang Chung and then I had Janet. Between those two, though, I would put Janet in over Wang Chung. Rhythm Nation is a pretty big song. I was surprised I didn't have as many votes as I expected when I voted like early this morning. That's an infamous, like a really iconic video, one of our biggest songs, right? Early on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I'm voting that one. Anyone have any disagreements?
Yeah. No, nope. I'm backing that up.
Yep, okay. Me too.
All right, well, let's cast those votes. And Janet's still battling. Actually, this is a pretty tight group altogether. So Roxette's actually second. Everyone Have Fun Tonight's third, Open Arms fourth, LL is fifth, and then Janet's two behind LL. So, and the Pixies are right behind that. So those are all pretty much in contention. So there you go. Again, surprise about Janet.
And the Buggles are in first. Oh, you didn't mention first. Yeah, the
Buggles. All right, let's quickly do AI here. And we have Wanna Be Startin' Somethin', Michael Jackson, Don't Go Yaz, Bizarre Love Triangle, New Order, Too Late for Goodbyes, Julian Lennon, Control, Janet Jackson, Used to Love Her, Guns N' Roses, Jump, Van Halen, Still of the Night, Whitesnake, Tom Sawyer, Rush, and Mexican Radio, Wall of Voodoo. Stacey, what do you got here?
Well, once again, I have to go with what I know rather than anything that's bigger, but Bizarre Love Triangle. I have to echo whoever said in the group chat that needs more love, because that's a great song. That's my pick. Mm.
It's a year of Bizarre Love Triangles, huh?
Apparently. It's, yes.
You look like he's making up these innuendos. I have to...
It'll work the goodness,
obviously, you live your life in kayfabe. I would say, obviously Tom Sawyer Rush, because that's been yours and my theme forever. So got to put mm-hmm. Rush in there. Although Van Halen Jump's a fucking gimme, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, we'll put those in. Although if you listen to the last No Holds Barred, Aaron and I talked about like 80 songs that I'd be fine that like never hearing again, and Jump is one of them. Like I've just heard it so many times, like I'm fine if I just never hear it again. But I do agree it belongs on here. I think Michael Jackson's gonna go on, wanna be starting something. Mm-hmm. So I put that in.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And then I guess I don't know, Whitesnake, is that the fifth one I'm gonna put in here?
Yeah, I mean there's better Guns N' Roses songs than Used to Love Her. Mexican Radio had an iconic video. And it's got one of the coolest lines, eating barbecued iguana, but it's not like a big deal. And that Julian Lennon song is trash. So I think Whitesnake is a good pick there.
All right. The five we picked are the top five and look to be safely enough in right now. New Order maybe isn't shouting different distance if Janet gets hot. But other than that, our five that we picked, Jump is number one, Tom Sawyer two, and all are safely in. All right, really quickly, let's do Group AJ, and that is our final one of the day here. And those 10 songs are Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge, Let's Groove Tonight, Cool in the Gang, Let's Dance, David Bowie, Hazy Shade of Winter, The Bangles, Roll With It, Steve Winwood, I Can Dream About You, Dan Hartman, Imagine, John Lennon, which actually has been disqualified, went by, was it like the soundtrack or something we caught for the 80s, but we were corrected a few times, one by Pro Wrestling Illustrated writer Stately Wayne Manor, stepped up and called us out. He's a big fan of the tournament and Place to Be Nation. For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica, Let's Go Crazy by Prince, and Too Much Time on My Hands by Styx. So we drop Lennon and pick from the other nine. I think this was actually the toughest of the group today, in my mind, Stacey. Any jump out for you?
Metallica. Okay. I can't not pick Metallica. I'm working my gimmick right now, but yeah, not honestly. Easy.
Scott?
Oh, Let's Go Crazy is my favorite Prince song, so I would definitely vote that.
All right. I think Rhythm of the Night has to go in. That's mm-hmm. a big 80s song.
Yeah.
I mean, Let's Dance obviously has to go too. So to me, that leaves Winwood and Cool in the Gang. I think Cool in the Gang has bigger songs than Let's Groove Tonight. It's a good, you know, it's a wedding song and all that. But or if you go to like any casino, that song's being played in the atrium bar as you walk through, you know, in the middle
yes.
of the casino for sure.
See, that's happened many times.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd go Winwood. That's a kind of a underrated Steve Winwood song. All songs are good, but Roll With It's a good one. You guys agree?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Yep, I'm good.
I know Russell Sellers will be happy. He's been stumping for Winwood on Twitter.
He's the Winwood stand. Yes. Give Russell some love.
Yeah, it's not go that far. But yeah, so these five are in. Lennon's got the fourth most votes, but if we drop that, these five are the ones that are in. Winwood's barely hanging on, though. So, all right, every day we have three dropping, except for the weekends. So every business day, we have three groups dropping. You can pick five out of the 10. 650 songs in the first round, and then we'll get down to the second round from there. So be sure to cast your votes, share it, vote, talk about it, be part of it, get in the conversation. It's been a ton of fun. I've loved the conversation about the tournament that's been going on. It's been a ton of fun each and every day in our live chat pages, our groups on Twitter, just a lot of back and forth. So it's been way more popular than I expected it to be. So I'm happy about it. Yes. And thrilled that it's brought so much energy and joy to everyone who's partaken. So check that out. And I mentioned a couple other things really quick, PlayStation.com. Be sure to check out Callum's piece on Nikolai Volkov and Brian Christopher, the Group Watch Champion Series on Censored 95. Stacey, we'll talk about Talking Pop later once we get there. Scott Grimes was back on with this week's TV Snapshot. I looked at last week's Dodie TV. And Joel Barnhart had a piece about this year's MLB Cooperstown class over the weekend as well. So check all that out. We'll talk more about our podcast feeds at the end of the show. But just wanted to call out some of the written stuff we had going on. So, all right, Scott, back to the corner with the pop culture report.
Yes. All right. Thank you, JR. So there was your top 10 in the Billboard. One movie came out, and it actually didn't come out the day before. It came out on Wednesday. Probably one of the most popular movies of the later 80s, only because it was a kind of a revolutionary concept in combining live action and live animation and putting it in one movie. The movie, JR, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
It's a big one.
Yes, big movie at the time. Yep.
All right, let's look that up here. Have you seen that one, Stacey?
I have not.
Okay. Well, in 1947, Los Angeles, Toons act in theatrical cartoon shorts as with live-action films. They regularly interact with real people and animals, reside in Toontown, a fictional place where animated cartoon characters reside. Private Detective Eddie Valiant and his brother Teddy once worked closely with the Toons on several famous cases, but after Teddy is killed by a Toon, Eddie relapsed into alcoholism and vows to never work for the Toons again. And then we get a whole bunch of shenanigans from there, starring the late, great Bob Hoskins as Eddie Valiant, Christopher Lloyd, Stubby K, Lou Hirsch, Kathleen Turner as Jessica Rabbit, of course, and on from there. Charles Fleischer as Roger Rabbit. I haven't seen this in forever. I mean, I saw it, you know, as a kid in the late 80s, early 90s, but God, I don't think I've probably seen this thing in, like, whatever, 28 years, however long it's been. Mm. How about you, Scott? Have you ever revisited this to see how it holds up?
I saw it in the movies. I remember definitely seeing it in the movies, and I liked it. I thought it was funny, but yeah, it's one of those ones that is definitely memorable, but doesn't get talked about anymore. You know, with all the stuff now, Pixar and all the advances we've made in cinema animation and such, that this movie has almost kind of been forgotten in the lexicon of cinema. But it shouldn't. It was actually very revolutionary for 1988 to have animation and real people in the same movie. So it was definitely different for the time. And I liked Bob Hoskins too. I was a big fan of his myself. Mm-hmm. And it was very, very different. Very different. But I've never really thought about it until today when I put the report together. So. Right. It's unfortunate that it's been forgotten in the annals of animation movies. Kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Speaking of annals, Jessica Rabbit, Hachimachi.
Hachimachi. Kathleen Turner's voice. Oh. She's turned into now. But anyway, there we go. Who Framed Roger? Only movie that came out on this week. And good, because it deserved its full attention. Mm-hmm. Let us go now to the diamond, JR. Major League Baseball. It was a Saturday, so all the teams were in action. Your Yankees, 4-1 winners at the stadium over the Indians. Tommy John with his fifth win. Cecilio Guante with his ninth save. He was a fine – he was like Adam Warren of 1988 for you guys. Seemed like he pitched every day until Billy Martin blew his arm out.
Tommy John before or after surgery?
After. Oh, well, after. He had the surgery like in 73 or something. Anyway, so we got the win. Mets lost at Wrigley to the Cubs 5-2. Your standings at the moment, the Tigers, Mr. Barnhart's Tigers, lead the East at 44-27. Yankees are two back. The A's lead the West by 6 over Minnesota. Mets lead the NL East by 5.5 over Pittsburgh. And the Dodgers lead the NL West by 3.5 over the Astros. So there you go. Since our last show, JR, the 1988 NBA season is over. Congratulations to the Lakers, who defeated the Detroit Pistons in 7 hard-fought games and became the first team since the 1969 Celtics to win back-to-back NBA championships. So congrats to the Lakers. All right, Stacey, I asked you earlier today, I like making our guests comfortable in the pop culture corner. I had asked who your favorite football team was / soccer. You told me, who was it again? Your current favorite team.
Yeah, the Western Sydney Wanderers are my local team.
But you said they weren't around in 1988, so.
No.
All right.
When did they start? It's a very new league.
Oh, okay.
Well, the league only started mainly like 10 or 11 years ago. They like sort of revamped soccer in this country and made a new league. And the Wanderers didn't even start at the beginning of the league. They only came in about maybe like 6 years ago. They're a very, very new team.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. All right. Well, to make you feel comfortable and get you get into the spirit of the Pop Culture Report, I'm going to give you the 1987-88 European Cup, which was the 33rd season of the European Cup club football tournament. Here were the teams. I'll go through them as fast as I can without – as everyone knows from my main event, I struggle with the Japanese names. Hopefully I don't blow any of these. The first round matchups, of course, I love Neuchâtel Xamax, who are Swiss, defeated Kumsi. They are Finnish. I'm going to spell it, Stacey. I'm going to see if you can help me. Kuusysi. Kusisi?
Kuzmi, yeah.
Okay, all right.
You're fine.
The Xamax team won. Bayern Munich, I know who they are. They defeated the CFKA Sredets, who I think are they Czech? No, they're Bulgarian. Oh, Rusev's favorite team. Real Madrid defeated Napoli. Porto, which I think is Portuguese.
Yeah, Portugal, yeah.
Yep, Portugal. Defeated Verdar. Lillestrøm defeated Linfield. Bordeaux, I thought that was a wine, defeated Dynamo Berlin. well, they are French anyway, so I got that right. Rapid Wien defeated Hamrun Spartans. PSV Eindhoven defeated Galatasaray. I can't even pronounce that. I'm not even going to pretend.
Galatasaray.
anyway, no, it begins with a B. Yeah, Galatasaray, yeah.
Oh.
Steaua Bucharesti.
Steaua Bucharest. That's Romania.
Thank you.
Made
me feel good. Romania, yes. They beat MTK. Shamrock Rovers. We don't know what country they're from. They defeated is that a Q or an O? Omonia. O-M-O-N-I-A.
Ammonia.
Mm.
Ammonia.
Dynamo Kiev. Oh, JR was rooting for them. Defeated
Is
Rangers.
That the Russian jobber in AWA?
Yes, Dynamo Kiev, yes. Olympiakos. Obviously, they lost to Gormik Zabrze.
How many fucking teams are in this thing? Jesus.
I know, there's a shitload. It's a lot
like
of
introducing the Olympic
the
countries.
First round, so
I know, right? Well, it's everybody.
I could have read all 650 80 songs in the time you fucking listed these games.
Juanese Esch, Benfica and Partizani Tirana, Fram against Sparta Prague, and Malmo FF against Anderlecht. Now, interesting, Stacey, I just read this. English clubs were banned from the European Cup following the Heysel Stadium disaster of 1985. So yeah. Everton was denied a place in the competition for the second time in 3 years. So no English Premier teams in this European Cup. And it was won, the final, I'm going to go through that.
Let me guess. Hang on. What? It's 1988, wasn't it?
Yes.
So 88, I would say PSV Eindhoven.
You are correct.
Yes, I still got it.
Yep.
This is embarrassingly, I'll explain why I know that, because when I was a child, I used to literally sit and read the entire history of football, and thusly, I could recite who won the World Cup and the European Cup and all those other things off by heart. So I'm glad to know something still stuck with me. I wouldn't be able to do it now, but I'm glad something stuck. Anyway.
That's fantastic. I love that. The American terms, we call them Philips Sport Verenigung, abbreviated as PSV. And again, PSV Eindhoven. Sports club in Eindhoven in the Netherlands, and they won the 88 European Cup. So there you go. All right. And finally, everyone, but it is actually pretty important. We did have a major death on this day on June 25th, 1988. For all of you rock fans, we actually talked about this band in one of our chats a while back. Everyone knows that the lead guitarist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers is John Frusciante. Of course, he left briefly, and they had Dave Navarro for an album, and then Frusciante came back. However, some of you may know, or some of you may not know, that John Frusciante was not the original lead guitarist of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. It was a gentleman by the name of Hillel Slovak, who was the original member of the band, went to high school with Anthony Kiedis and Flea.
Is he related to LL Cool J?
No, he is not. They look nothing alike. And anyway, he was a tremendous guitarist. He was on their first two albums, Freaky Styly and the Unfit Mofo Party Plan, which were the two albums before Mother's Milk. And sadly, though, he had like Anthony Kiedis, had a terrible heroin addiction. And unlike Anthony Kiedis, was not able to shake it. And on this date, June 25th, 1988, he was found dead in a Los Angeles hotel.
Wow.
So very sad. Hillel Slovak, the original lead guitarist for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, passed away on this date, June 25th, 1988. And then, of course, they brought in John Frusciante. So that, JR, after going through every country in Europe, is our...
I appreciate it, Scott.
Oh, you're welcome, Stacey, anytime. And there is your pop culture corner.
It's good to know that even after 7 years, we can still do this ridiculous nonsense, like listing those names. But here we are, still strong. We're still standing, Scott, as the song goes.
That's right. That's in the tournament.
Another big Haas match brings us back from break, and that is Bam Bam Bigelow taking on Andre the Giant. Andre back in regular MSG action, it seems. He had taken a break, but now he's here monthly. Bobby leads him out to booze as we settle right in on the main event line, oscillating up and down. Bigelow in another big MSG spot with a chance to make a statement, chugs out to his saxophone music. The crowd's pumped. Kent asks Al if the tattoos can be intimidating to opponents. Bobby jogs to the back as we get going. Kent calls Andre a big elephant. Talks about his big family members as he chokes away at Bammer early. Andre chokes away some more as he calmly dominates Bigelow. Andre knocks Bigelow down and sits on his chest. As Graham says, Bigelow has won 2 national arm wrestling titles in California. And Kent says, oh, yes, I may have seen them. I wonder where he see. Are they bootleg tapes? Does he happen to be in California?
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. I may have seen those, actually. Andre misses a boot, and Bigelow rocks him with a clothesline. Andre staggers back, gets caught in the ropes. Bammer clubs away, but Andre eventually works free and locks in a tight bear hug that goes on for a while. Andre finally releases and nails a headbutt and some stiff kicks. Andre whips Bammer to the corner but gets off balance. Bigelow lands a shot but runs into a big boot, and Andre gets the win. Andre attacks after the bell and chokes away until Jim Duggan makes a save with his 2x4 to a big pop. Andre quickly bails and hits the road, and then Duggan gets the mic and lays down a challenge for next month. Decent stuff considering Andre's limitations. Bigelow didn't really get to show much at all as he's basically squashed with very little offense. The bloom is really off the rose with him. And Andre's presence continues to impress. I went 1.5 stars on this, and I've actually been pretty surprised that Bigelow is even still around. Like, I always remembered him. I always thought he was pretty much gone, like, right after 4. So I'm surprised he's still here into the summer watching these things. But again, this is really just a shot to get Andre a win. Bigelow just jobs out clean. 1.5 stars, Stace.
Listen, I loved this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of Andre, even like especially not especially, but like late era, like this Andre as well. I really, really enjoy in a really sort of PWO kind of way. I think he does lots of things really well and sort of works around his limitations really well. And he's also just a really fun heel when he heals it up. Yeah, and I really liked it. Oh, I loved, like, the commentators freaking out about Bigelow's head tattoo.
Mm.
Like they'd probably never seen one before. I guess it was 1988, but, like, it's just, man, if they saw people today, all their faces tattooed up. Yeah.
He'd collapse.
Wouldn't be able to handle it. But, no, I really, really like this because I really just like Andre, like, beating people up and being a shithead. And, I love the way Bigelow moves, you know, for a guy his size. But it kind of works in this context because he's up against someone who's, like, much bigger than him, and he can sort of roll around and bump around, and it seems natural instead of him just kind of, like, showing off a bit. Yeah, and I really liked him. What was I going to say? I really like the bear hug that they did.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way they worked it, the way the commentators were sort of like analyzing it the whole time, trying to, you know, figure out, oh, is he going out? No, he's going to, you know, he shouldn't go down to his knees. And then, oh, is Andre adjusting his grip and all this sort of stuff? It was really cool. And then, and Bam Bam was great selling it, like sort of going out and then coming back and then trying to fight out and he couldn't fight out and then going down again. And then he actually dropped to his knees. And because they'd built that up, I was just like, oh no, he dropped to his knees. And then Andre like headbutted him and, you know, and was about to finish him off and all this. And then Bam Bam got that one hope spot where he hit the big tackle when Andre was wobbly, and then he just runs into like a big ass boot, and then Andre just elbow drops him and pins him. I really, really loved all of this. Because like I said, I really like what Andre was doing at this point, and I like Bam Bam in this match because his bumping act works against Andre, and yeah, so I said 2.5. Scott.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with that. I gave it a star and a half, but you've kind of opened my eyes a little bit, Stace, with your comments, because considering when I thought about it, considering that this was probably, and it says it on the, it said it in the note that in Graham's notes, this is Bigelow's last appearance at the Garden. I think we see him again down the line, maybe on TV, but this is his last appearance at the Garden for quite a while. Mm-hmm. The time of your match is 9:09. I would have expected a bit more of a squash, but to Andre's credit, he gave Bigelow a little more than, I'm not sure what the backstage thing was. If Bigelow was already out the door, I'm assuming he probably was, but he looked a lot better than you would have thought an out the door match would have been. You know what I mean? Andre was getting to that point in his career was he knew that his obviously didn't have a lot in ring left. So even in winning matches, he was going to do his best to put over, you know, anybody, even a guy that was leaving. And he did. Even though Andre got the win, he still made Bigelow look fairly good again for somebody who was not staying. Mm-hmm. So to his credit, that was impressive. I was impressed by that. Having said that, obviously Bigelow was, on his way out the door, and Andre gets the win. When was the last time we saw like a clean Andre win at all?
I think it's Bigelow, Survivor Series.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, right. Pretty much. Obviously Andre kind of, not rebooting by any stretch, but obviously kind of setting himself up to get into a certain point in the card. So it was, you know, this had to happen anyway. But again, Bigelow, for a guy who was going out the door, this was not a squash. And there were a couple of legitimate moments where you thought maybe he would get a win here. So I got to say, Stace, even though I gave it a star and a half, you kind of opened my eyes to how impressive the match was.
Yeah.
So yeah, a star and a half for me, but maybe two if I think about it. But it was good. It was impressive for an out the door match.
Yeah, we've had
Andre gets the win.
Bunch of Haas battles tonight. So
yes, big Haas battles tonight. Yeah, a lot of big dudes going tonight. Yeah, definitely.
So for all intents and purposes, this is Bigelow's last overall match.
Yeah, I figured as much.
He's on he gets subbed out a bunch for a while, but his actual last match was at the Perth Amboy New Jersey High School on July 7th against Haku. So he had missed a bunch. He was subbed out a bunch before then. So I don't know if this was local. They had him, you know, he showed up for it. I don't know. But he missed he would be replaced a bunch before and after that. The first appearance that he misses in one of the first ones in Montreal says he failed a period due to a family emergency. So I don't know if he had issues going on. And then he ends up missing that one and then, you know, comes back for that one local one and then is gone. But, yeah, this is pretty much it. Obviously, we'll see him again 1993 when he makes his return. But for now, it's it for Bigelow. And it's definitely been kind of, you know, missed opportunity for many reasons. We've chronicled them all, what could have been with him during the stretch. And, you know, it stinks. But, again, the more I see him, the more he's just not suited as a face. Like, I've talked about it through the 95 stuff and, again, here. I think he's just got the heel look. I think he would have been better in that role. than the face. I think he's almost too short and kind of too stocky with the tattoos. This isn't like a face. Just not a baby face look, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and we're getting to the point now also in the company where we weren't having a lot of baby face managers. And I mean, no knock on Humpy. I mean, he's a great manager, but the fact you needed a baby face manager when there weren't any more, I mean, Albano, obviously the big fat sloppy pig was out the door. I wonder if he had decided that a heel turn, that he would have turned heel if he'd stuck around. Probably not. But yeah, I mean, I agree that the babyface thing with the way he looked with the outfit and the tattoo head and everything seemed a bit odd. I agree with that. What do you think, Stace? Did it seem weird to see a guy like him as a babyface with a look and everything?
Yeah, the first time I saw him as a babyface, I think the first time was when I actually watched the 87 Survivor Series when he was on the babyface team, which I think watching that whole match, it was weird to me who was a heel and who was a face to some extent. But yeah, it's weird, but again, like, it was the 80s. I don't know who, for what reason you people cheer for things or not. So whatever.
Mm.
he probably would have been more effective as a heel for having that look. But I guess in a sea full of monster heels, like they had Andre and Gang and like all these big heels around anyway, that, you know, it probably stood out for being like the one giant fat guy who was a face. So I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, I agree there to an extent. I think, I guess my face take has been more watching his like 95 stuff, which we wrote about a lot in our refresh pieces, Scott, and I've talked about it a bunch on, on Wrestling Warzone with me and Chad. Just his look in 95 as a face, like, just, he just doesn't fit. But anyway, I'll leave that to there. All right, our next match is an interesting one and a pretty infamous one as well, as it was set up a month ago here at MSG, and that is the Ultimate Warrior taking on Bobby Heenan in a weasel suit match. So Heenan, of course, had been on a little bit of a hot streak, defeating Coco Beware a couple of times in tag matches, and now he issued an open challenge that was answered by the Warrior, and the Weasel Suit match was a gimmick that was brought with Bobby, I believe, from AWA, right? He was doing it there, too.
Yes. No, he had a feud in the early 80s with Greg Gagne, right. And it might be the same suit, probably.
It looked like it. It looked pretty rad. Yeah. So anyway, the loser here has to get stuffed in the Weasel Suit, of course. Great heat for Heenan, who's been in a hot streak. Opened his mouth too much, got in trouble. Warrior gets a huge pop and lugs out the Weasel Suit for the stip. Graham says he could win a Mr. Olympia contest at any time. Bobby stalls and ducks around, doing what he can to avoid contact. Warrior chases him around. Billy thinks the Brain is using some sharp strategy, trying to wear down the Warrior. Warrior gets a few shots in, but Heenan's able to sneak out an object and jab it to the throat a few times. Warrior is staggered as the ref checks Bobby, but can't find the object. Warrior blocks another shot and yanks the weapon away and unloads some judo chops, according to Kent. Al says Heenan has a lot of fat around his shoulder as Warrior shoots him from corner to corner. Warrior grabs a sleeper and puts Heenan out cold for the win. The crowd revs up as Warrior grabs a suit and stuffs Heenan into it. Al asks if this is an old Indian trick. So I don't know. Does he think Warrior's portraying a Native American? I don't know what he thinks he is. I know there's like an infamous joke. Didn't Harley Race call Warrior like a Native American or Indian?
Yep.
Yeah, something like that.
A redacted word, Indian, even.
Correct. Correct.
Mm.
Yes, that's right. I got you now. I'm picking up what you're putting in. Bobby eventually wakes up and stooges and flops around until he gets the suit off. Quick and fun served as both the payoff for Bobby being a dick about his wins, but also gets Warrior into a key feud because he's now crossed paths with the Brain, who is, of course, never taking these kinds of things lightly. Of course, all it took was Hogan throwing him into a cage or something to set off a multi-year attack on him. So you know that Warrior is in trouble with the Brain. So I thought this really worked on multiple levels. Using this as an entry point to a feud with the Heenan family made a lot of sense. One star just for the fun and for Al asking if it's an old Indian trick. But it was it's a pretty memorable moment and match. I think it was on like the Warrior DVD when that came out. It's on one of those ones that makes the rounds. So, and this show is actually from 24/7, Scott. So I think like it was probably on there for this match specifically, I'm guessing. So anyway, what'd you think of this one?
It was a fun gimmick while for what it was. I gave it a star. Obviously, it wasn't meant for Bobby. It was meant to put the Warrior over. you know, taking out this, you know, the big manager in the company and looking ahead to what Warrior would be used for and his push. I mean, there was a lot of – the one thing that is being executed during Hogan's absence is that all of these other – this is a good time, and it's not just for Savage's benefit, but a lot of baby faces are getting a good amount of shine now, both nationally on the Cindies and on the local loops. With Hogan gone, we need to kind of, you know, Vince needed to kind of really beef up the babyface side of the ledger. And, you know, we've got Beefcake and we've got, you know, obviously Savage at the top. And we have Beefcake and we have Morocco and we have Duggan and now we have Warrior. So there's no doubt that one of the main objectives right now on the loops is really pushing all these baby faces, because now with Hogan gone, there's a wider swath of time on these shows to really put all these baby faces over and really strengthen that side of the roster. With Hogan gone, there's a chance to spread the shine out. And I think, and this match is a perfect example of that. Warrior's a guy, fans are really digging him. They love the colors. They love the boots, the music, the crazy power moves. So a good spot here for him. And Bobby just does Bobby well. It doesn't matter what it is, announcing, managing, promos, or even the occasional time he puts the tights on. Bobby does everything well. And he's here to put over Warrior, just like, you know, gang.
Sorry. I can't do that.
Okay, Siri. Where that came from.
You hear that a lot from women, Scott. That's okay.
No, I don't know anything about Jim Duggan. No, probably trying to figure out how I butcher that Swiss name. Anyway, the point here is the baby faces are really getting a boost here with now extra room on all these shows without Hogan. And Warrior is obviously I think Warrior and Duggan and Beefcake are the three biggest effects of it. So, and I think this is a big thing. The big thing for Warrior. You know, he had the whole Hercules thing going on, but now he's taking on the number one manager in the company and on a big stage like the Garden, and I'm sure it was talked about on the Cindies. So, big deals here. Big deals here, Stace. And for Warrior, it's a big time to shine right now.
Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot, actually. This was just a fun time. Like you said, like, Bobby is Bobby, and he's just going to be awesome, like, whatever the fuck he's doing. And he was great here. Like, I totally cracked it at the announcers starting to count every time Bobby would powder out of the ring. And then he kept doing it, and they kept counting, and that was really fun. And just all that sort of nonsense. Like, the bit where he had, like, he was hiding the foreign object from the ref, which went on for a while, and I would just think, this would be so much more fun if I hadn't already seen this an hour ago with that bullshit George Steele match.
Right, but, yeah, that's a good point, too.
That just irritated me. But I mean, Bobby, you know, does that shit so much better, and yeah, and it was great, and Warrior's great. I have a lot of type of Warrior. I really like the Warrior, and I thought the finish was cool in that, like, he didn't you know, use his finisher. He'd put the sleeper hold on him and knocked him out so that he'd be asleep enough for him to put the suit on, and then he would wake up and find himself in the suit. Like, I thought that was actually really clever that they did it that way.
Right.
So yeah, and like the suit stuff and Bobby's tantrum was great, except for Lord L fake laughing like Michael Cole, which was really off-putting. But it was great. Like, you know, it was just a fun time for everyone. And yeah, I said 2 stars. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, that really is kind of the, you kind of hint around it, Scott, but it's really the, like, launching of the Warrior as a, you know, to the next level. Like, we've seen him kind of get introduced. We've seen some decently, you know, yep. He closed out one MSG. But now, when you step up to feuding with the Heenan family, now he's taking the next step in his evolution. So you can tell that they're starting to take him more seriously. So he's on the rise for sure. And this is a big match for him historically, honestly, to get the shot with Bobby. Crowds into it. Big moment. A lot of fun, Stacey, like you said. And really now propels him to the next stage of his career. So it's a key moment in match for him. Absolutely. What's not a key match is our next one, but we'll see how it all pans out. And that is
maybe, perhaps,
kind of playing off our issues from one of our. Was it last month we had Bad News versus Brett, or two ago? Do you remember, Scott? I think it was two ago, right?
What's that?
When Bad News fought Bret Hart.
It was two ago. Okay, sorry. Yes.
So here we are, Bad News Brown taking on his partner, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Brett's partner. Bad News marches out to booze as he looks to continue his issues with the Hart Foundation, seemingly still fully healed after last month. Anvil now is sliding into a face roll here. Anvil charges out and chases Brown to the floor, where he walks around and takes his time. Brown returns and Anvil slugs and bites at him and goes to a chin lock. Billy makes some ZZ Top comparisons as Brown works out of the hold, but Anvil keeps control with more biting and punching. Brown's got no offense in at all, as Anvil gets two on a shoulder block and goes back to a chin lock. Bad News gets his knees up on a splash to finally slow the Anvil down. Brown gets to work with strikes of his own, and Al puts over his stamina to survive that beating and take control. Graham thinks Brown's glove is illegal. Things spill outside where Brown just jams a chair to the gut of Anvil as the ref just lets go. Back inside, Brown gets a flying leg smash for two, as it's called on commentary, but Anvil kicks out with authority. Anvil fires back away, but Brown levels him with a clothesline that cuts him down. Anvil absorbs some blows and stands tall, but Brown's able to drop him with a hard shot. Brown smothers Anvil with a seated chin lock. Neidhart survives, but comes back with a tight bear hug, which he keeps locked in and off for a while. Brown eventually goes low to break it and slams Anvil down, but misses a punch off the middle rope. Anvil hammers away with heavy blows and a dropkick and the big running shoulder block. That knocks Brown to the floor. Brown pulls the Anvil out with a brawl outside. Anvil slides back in. They play to the crowd, but Brown slips in and hits the ghetto blaster that knocks Anvil to the floor, where he is counted out. Anvil attacks after the bell and puts a quick beating on Brown, hitting a power slam. And I will say, this was better than it looked on paper, for sure. I thought it was going to be a fucking stinker. It was slow in spots, but it really popped when they tossed some bombs and wore each other down with heavy offense. And it felt like a real Haas war, another one tonight. And the crowd stayed with it. I thought, you know, they went a while, too, and kept it interesting and never got too boring. I thought it was feisty. And I bit on the false double count out, too. I thought for sure we were getting a double count out there. So that was kind of neat. So I went 2 stars on this one, Stacey. I liked it a little bit better than I expected.
I'm glad you did. No, well, I mean, it was fine. Like, yeah. I don't mean to, you know, like, it was fine. But I think because after the Weasel Suit match, and it was sort of this late in the show, so to speak, mm-hmm. I did not need to sit through a very, very long Jim Neidhart match. Like, I don't know. It was fine. Like, I liked, like you said, I liked it when they were dropping bombs. Like, that was the fun part. I liked Bad News Brown's leg drop. There was a funny moment when Anvil was, I don't know, he was trying to Hulk up. And he was like, you know, no selling and hulking up, getting all excited. And then he just got headbutted. And that was it. I was like, well, that's fucking great. Well done. And but like that, yeah, so there were some moments in it I liked. But I also thought that it went forever. Like, it felt like it went for a while. That's what I wrote down in my notes. So I must have felt like it. And yeah, and then they did the count out, which was clever. Like you said, the way that they sort of flipped it instead of doing the double count out, and they got Neidhart counted out. It was a cool finish. But yeah, like I just didn't like a lot of it in the middle, and it seemed to go for a while. So I said 1.5 stars.
Yeah, it was Scott. Long. It was 16:23.
Yeah, it felt like it, to be honest. That was sort of my main issue. It just sort of kept going on. Anyway, Scott.
Yeah, Stace, I was surprised it wasn't that long too, 16:23. And I'm curious, JR, before we move on, looking at the I wonder if 24/7 chopped this up back in the day, because the match order that Graham has is not even close to what we watched today, the copy we have on the network, because according to this match was like fifth, I think, or something, and actually it was like seventh. And Duggan was after the, and Warrior was right before the main. It was very weird. Anyway.
Yeah, no, Graham's card makes, I don't know, it makes a little more sense, but I think we have it the right way. I think he probably says it out of order. Because if you look at it, too, he has Steel Valentine two matches after Morocco Davis, which doesn't seem right. The way this flowed, it seemed like Valentine already wrestled when he attacked Morocco. So
yeah, I agree.
I think what we saw was probably accurate. I think Graham's probably off. He's too worried about combing his hair. Cocky bastard.
Yeah. Trying to type and
fix your sight.
And jealously longing at Claire's picture on his mirror.
But yeah, 16-23. It definitely was a long match.
Yeah, it was definitely a long match. But I got to agree, JR. I was... And we're in a weird spot here with the Hart Foundation because obviously things are changing with them. Last month on the Mayhouse show, as a heel, Neidhart wrestled Morocco and got the win, which is odd. This month, I guess as a babyface, he's taking on Bad News Brown. So obviously something's happened in 30 days in terms of character for the Anvil and obviously for the Hitman as well, but we'll document that as we move ahead. Obviously, when you first see it on paper, you're like, holy crap. Like I said, Stace, oh my God, we got to watch 60 minutes of this. And yeah, it probably was maybe like 6 minutes too long. They probably could have put these minutes somewhere else. But like it seems the tone of the night, these Haas matches with a lot of bomb throwing, and it was very impressive. I was more than happy with as good as it was. Neidhart, obviously not the best singles worker. He's not one of those, you know, psychology driven singles guys. But he can hold his own with anybody if he needs to. And I wouldn't say Bad News Brown is a tempo dictator. Even though he has wrestled most of his career as a heel. But I got to say, it was not that bad. It could have been a lot worse. There was some good action on the outside. But it seemed fine. It definitely was probably 6 minutes too long. They probably could have put these minutes in other places. But
or
I was fine
match
with it.
We would see like in the first half, like second.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. But so to Stacey's point, it's a weird slot to have it this late in the night, but to their credit, they did at least bring some energy, whereas on paper it looked like it could have been more of a drag. So all right, we go backstage. Al is with Bobby Heenan, who's back in his suit and not too thrilled with what went down earlier. He says Warrior choked him out, never pinned or submitted him. He's a human being, not a weasel. He says that wasn't a win, and also calls out Duggan, issues a threat on behalf of Andre the Giant. So effective interview there. Graham and Kent then break down the main event. Graham talks about his prep conversation he had with Randy Savage earlier tonight. And then Al talks to DiBiase, who has run out of patience, said Savage has backed him into a corner. He can win the title just by walking out of the cage, and says while they're locked inside, Virgil will be outside with Liz, and Savage will be distracted, and that will cost him, and he's going to be collecting tonight and walking out as champion. And that brings us to our blow-off match, the third straight between Randy Savage and Ted DiBiase here at Madison Square Garden, this time inside of a steel cage to ensure no count-out or interference. The feud has been fantastic. The crowd is fired up. Erupts for Savage and Liz. Savage with an awesome rope tonight with a sweet dragon across the back. DiBiase attacks Savage as he comes in, peppers away, works the knees. Savage quickly comes back and loads with elbows, and the two trade offense on and off, but DiBiase lands more shots and makes the first escape attempt. Savage works the challenger over, and then makes a couple of saves as DiBiase tries to scale his way out at any opening. Al and Graham talk about the Liz-Virgil situation as DiBiase starts to work the mix session with some punches. Savage takes back over after another save, but Virgil reaches in and costs Savage a chance to escape. Ted punches away, but Savage wriggles free and scales the cage, but Virgil blocks his path and allows Ted to drill him from behind. After some Ted offense, both men take each other out with a double clothesline, but Savage moves first and crawls to the door. Gets halfway out, but Ted makes the save. A moment later, we get another double clothesline, and both try to escape, but Virgil blocks Savage, and DiBiase bails on his attempt for some weird reason and goes to beat on Savage more. Savage blocks a suplex for one of his own, as Al says Ted's legs are shot, has no power left. Savage gets an atomic drop, sends DiBiase to the cage. Savage crawls to the door, but Virgil comes over and slams it on his head to great heat. DiBiase makes a go for it, but Savage blocks him, and the two trade punches on their knees. Savage slings DiBiase to the cage and climbs, but Virgil's there again to block him. Now a fan comes out of the crowd and just dives at Virgil up on the cage, but security pulls him off. DiBiase gets involved in that. Savage slams his and Virgil's head together, and with both falling down, Savage climbs out and retains. I thought this was a great match, best of the series, just nonstop action, big heat. Virgil was awesome, just going all out to help his boss, and then it all falls apart at the end when it backfires. Savage survives again with a top-notch showing. Just a red-hot main event to cap off this really strong series between these two guys. I really, really enjoyed this. I went 4 stars, and like I said, it was the best of the bunch that we've seen for these three. 4, really, if you count Mania, and 5, if you want to count Saturday Night's main event. So the best we've seen between these guys to date, Scott. I love this.
I give it 4 stars as well. And, I mean, is it 6? Didn't they wrestle on both Saturday Night's main events? Or no, just
no,
the early
gang
one.
And the other, remember.
It was Gang and the other one. That's yeah. Right. Okay. So still 5, though. That's mm-hmm. crazy. But this is the best of the bunch. 4 stars. Savage is the man right now. He is totally enveloped this role. Great babyface champion. He is the face of it right now. I think he has been a complete success. The crowd is totally into him. And him and DiBiase have really good chemistry. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they worked anywhere else. I don't know if DiBiase was ever in Memphis or whatever, but these guys really have it together. And you could argue that this is one of the great benefits of Hogan not being around at the moment, is both these guys, not just Savage, but DiBiase has been given the opportunity to, I mean, not knock on Savage, but a Savage-DiBiase match seems to have, when you suspend disbelief, almost more even than if it was DiBiase and Hogan. And I think that's good for Savage, and it's good for us as fans that we can look at it that way. And this has been great for Savage. Mm-hmm. He has looked that good every night out. And Virgil has been incredible in his role.
Yeah, he was excellent here. He was really
excellent. Yeah, he was great, bopping around and everything, and then, of course, you know, pulls off the screw up at the end. Of course, the ending was almost a shit show when that kid jumped on the – I think I've seen that kid before. Is that the same guy? Didn't we have a show some time ago where a fan ran in? Oh, maybe it was. Maybe that was a Raw I was watching. But, I mean, that was dangerous. I mean, that kid got pretty high. I mean, he literally got in the middle of them.
It almost felt like it was part of the show, I mean, the way they did it.
Yeah, I mean, he got up, and you would figure they let him get way too high. If it was on purpose, that's very dangerous. If it was obviously not planned, then boy, how slow were those guys? I mean, they let him get practically up to the roof or to the top. I did enjoy. I mean, Superstar's funny, or was it Superstar? Or was it Alfred? It was Superstar that's like telling Elizabeth she could stay beautiful if she becomes a power lifter. it's like so fucking strange. Because you gotta help out, brother. Your sister is so hot, but you gotta put on like another 150 pounds. What is he talking about? What a putz. Oh my god. Anyway, crowd is insane. I think that's the first time we've seen Savage wear kind of that Far East Asian looking robe as a baby face. I thought I remember that was kind of strictly when he was a heel in like 86. I hadn't seen that robe in a while, but it's one of my favorites that he has. Fantastic match, Stacey. Savage is very comfortable at the top of the card right now as the world champion, and DiBiase has just been a beast as the number one heel since the turn of the year. Almost better than Andre. Almost.
Yeah, this was good fun. I said 3.5. I'm not as high on it as you guys, but I think maybe because you guys have watched the whole feud and seen it play out, whereas I haven't, I don't really have a lot to compare it to per se. But yeah, it was a really fun cage match. I enjoyed it. Like, I just love the idea that, like, okay, we need to stop all the interference. Let's have a cage match. And then Virgil just interferes through the whole fucking thing anyway. Like, but like in a good way, like it was really fun. All of Virgil's shit was really fun. And like by the end of it, I was just like, oh, just fuck off with this Virgil, like in a good way, because right. Like I was just like, he keeps interfering, like get the fuck out, you know. So I was glad when the kid came up to beat his ass, like but that was weird, like that was just like, yeah. You said it was really strange because he got all the way up there, and then I think I saw him sitting in the front row, like after it finished, when Savage like was walking back, like he was in that hat, and he was sitting in the, so like literally he like interfered in the main event, and they just kind of like let him go back and sit in his chair.
You almost wonder if it was a plan, so which is dangerous, is why would they set that precedent? But
very dangerous.
It's weird.
I don't know what was going on there, but yeah, my favorite part of the match, I agree, is when Superstar Graham was telling Elizabeth to hit the gym, like, so that so that she could help so out strange. Savage when Virgil interfered. Like, as if every time Virgil interfered, he was just like, yeah, she's got to go and help him out. Like, as if he wants her to go and beat the fuck out of Virgil. Like, dude. But yeah, that's hilarious. But anyway, it was a really good cage match. I think the cage match environment suits Ted, mm-hmm. like, a lot better. Because, I mean, like, technical Ted in WWF, like, yeah, okay, fine. But, like, Ted brawling in Mid-South is, like, so much better. And right. so, like just the way that he works, it's actually a lot better for him to be in this environment where he can just, like, brawl and punch and have a cage match rather than trying to work, like, boring technical WWF Ted. So I enjoyed that. So I think Ted was really good in this. Savage was really good in this. Obviously, he's always good. And, yeah, and Virgil was great being a shit on the outside to sort of build up to the finish where Savage finally got them together and bonked their heads. And Ted H. Oh, my God, there was one bump that Savage took, right? I think it was when Virgil interfered and, like, pushed him off the cage. And he, like, sort of tripped on the ropes and then fell down and, like, hit his head right on the...
That was a hard one.
On the mat. Like, he ate shit with that. And, yeah, then you're right. Then Ted just walked over instead of just walking out while he was dead. But, yeah. No, but it was really, really good. I loved the teasers and I loved all, like when Virgil slammed the door in his face. That's always a really good spot. Yeah, so I enjoyed this a hell of a lot. And, yes, yeah, so it was a very fun main event.
Scott, does the way this feud developed make you feel any different from our discussion from the first match in April?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're talking about
the way it's all come out that you're okay with him losing that first match now.
Yeah, I do. Because I think he's so over right now. It definitely recovered well. It still could have been moved, and I'm fine with it, but this trilogy has been amazing, and you almost forget that Savage lost that match at this point, which is great. But Stacey, I've decided, I think I'm going to talk to Steve Willey and the rest of some of our merchandise people, and I think we're going to get you a sponsored shirt that says, fuck off with this Virgil. I think that's one of the greatest lines I think I've ever heard any guest ever say. Not Virgil, this Virgil.
That Virgil in particular.
That Virgil.
Specific Virgil. Yeah, I mean, I have no offense to other Virgils, like, you know, whatever.
Well,
but,
Ronald's.
But this one in particular can get fucked, yeah.
Anyway, no, you're exactly right, JR. I mean, look, that was all here nor there, just creative spitballing. But if it's going to give us three incredible matches like this and two guys who just are kicking ass in the ring and that we're very comfortable with overall, again, this is all about trying to make the main event stable with, you know, the money man not around. It's working perfectly. And this has been a great feud. And we've gotten great matches, and they've worked all around the circuit. So I was wondering, I'm curious, and Graham doesn't have it on his site, I'm curious if the match they had in Baltimore earlier in the day was also a cage match. He didn't note it. Probably not. Graham usually mentions stuff like that, so maybe the matinee match in Baltimore was not in a cage. So this was probably special for the Garden, which is perfectly fine with me. But it definitely shows that Savage is just the company's comfortable with him and he's embraced it and things are okay right now overall with the whole roster. But if the main event could be comfortable and safe, then they can work on, again, putting over the other baby faces, the Beefcakes, the Duggins, the Warriors. They don't have to worry about having to make sure the main event's stable because Savage goes out there and kicks ass and takes names every night. And yes, Stace, when you have a guy like DiBiase who could work both sides, be very technical, but again, be a tremendous brawler. And that's what makes this match a great finish of the trilogy. Very easy for the backstage guys to work the cards when you know your main event's in safe shape. So definitely a great end of the trilogy. And Savage is looking like a beast right now.
All right, why don't we get to our awards to wrap things up? I think we're all pretty much in agreement for Match of the Night, Savage DiBiase.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And our cousin Junior for Worst Match of the Night, I am sticking with Valentine Steele. Any disagreements?
Yes. No, like, not disagreeing. I agree.
That
what
Morocco,
a piece of shit.
Yeah, the Morocco-Davis match wasn't great, but George Steele's garbage. I'm fine.
All right, our
complete
Hogan
trash.
Award for the MVP of the night. I had a tough time with this because both Savage and DiBiase were so great, but I actually went with Bobby Heenan. Like, I loved that promo. The Weasel Sue match was really well done and, again, helped get Warrior over, and he's just been on point. I just thought it was kind of his night outside of the main event. And the promo sealed it for me. He was fantastic in that. So that was my choice.
I actually agree. I said Bobby as well. And for the reason, he was all over it.
I can't believe I'm about to say this, and this should be documented after episode 496, but I'm actually going to give the MVP to Duggan.
Jesus.
I think he actually
stepped
up with the big win over Gang, challenged Andre publicly at the Garden, like getting in the big guy's face. And I mean, he took control of his character, and I was stunned at how impressed I was at where he is right now and how he's evolved since he's been there. So Bobby was awesome, but I knew Bobby was going to be awesome.
Right.
I was stunned at how good Duggan was tonight.
Yeah, fair enough.
Finally won you over. How many episodes did it take?
496 episodes.
There we are.
He gets about 2 minutes of time. All right,
see,
next.
Kids, shows you stay persistent. Anything can happen.
Just has been like poised with his finger on that button.
I've just been waiting.
Just waiting.
Yes.
Biding his time.
All right, Uncle Elmer Award for the biggest fucking loser of the whole show. I'm with George Steele again.
Yep, 100%.
I'm giving it to Duggan just because I want. No, I'm not kidding. No, George Steele, he was fucking garbage. Move on.
All right.
Let's talk about that part.
Best moment of the night. I went with Hacksaw attacking Andre. I thought the crowd went nuts for that. It was a cool moment. Really, you know, ignites their feud and it gets Andre into something else, which we kind of needed to. Just all around, I really dug that moment.
I concur, obviously.
Yeah, I like that too. I would also say like the weasel suit, like Bobby being put in the weasel suit at the end and him selling it. That was a highlight for me too. So,
okay. All right. The Morocco Award for the biggest juice head of the night. Morocco's here, so it's got to be him.
Yeah.
No problem with that.
All right. And the Patera Award for the worst hair. Kenny's not on the show, so we get a different winner. And actually with Bobby Heenan, as great as he was on the night, I thought his hair was a fucking mess. It was all over the place. It was disheveled. There wasn't too many bad haircuts on this evening, but I thought his looked the worst to me all night.
I'll go with that. It was a little over fluffy.
Yeah, I did not like Duggan's hair either.
Get used to it because it doesn't get any better.
No.
It doesn't change.
All right, and our final grade out of 10. So last month I went 5.5, and I thought this month was more exciting. The main event was a touch better. I liked all the Haas matches we got. The crowd was fucking molten. I went 6 on this one, so I dug it. One of the better ones we've seen MSG-wise.
I'm going to go up a half point as well, and last month I gave it a 5, so I'm going to give this one a 5.5.
Okay.
It was a good show. We had some matches that were a little, and George Steele sucks the blood out of everything and the energy out of the room. But the surprising way I enjoyed Duggan, the main event was great. The Boss Man debut, there was a lot of Haas on this night. We didn't get a lot of technical expertise on this evening. Saw a lot of brawling and a lot of power, which is uncommon for an MSG show to have this much of one type of match. But I thought was just a notch better than last month, probably because the main event was better. So 5.5 for me.
Yeah, I said 6, I would say, because it was a good show. A really good main event, and I enjoyed pretty much all of the undercard except for the shitty George Steele match. But I enjoyed the squashes, and I enjoyed all the other undercard matches. And it was a good match. Good match. Good show.
All right.
6 out of 10.
Really good awesome. Show.
So there you go, Stacey. I'm glad you got a good MSG
show.
Because it's not always guaranteed. Yes. Once Sheriff
no.
Pete's
yes,
not,
I'm glad I got this one. Yeah.
Once Sheriff Pete's not on the docket, though, it's pretty much a guarantee it'll be at least decent. So that's
yes.
That's all right. So PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop, Pro Wrestling Only, our 3 iTunes feeds. Be sure to subscribe to all those to catch all the newest, latest, and greatest podcasts. I mentioned Talking Pop, Stacey. Do you want to really quickly just talk about your experience there?
I was on Talk and Pop this month, with Jenny and Tim, whom I love dearly. And it was a wild and interesting ride that we cover a lot of topics like Australia and the fact that it does not exist. And lots of my American trip, including when we all went to New Orleans.
I heard about
Scott.
That.
Yeah, right. So you can hear even more New Orleans talk on Talk and Pop. I'm not sorry. We also get into some real stuff, mm-hmm. some real personal stuff as Tim and I go into the gay lifestyle and how that has been for us. I don't mean to be trite, because it was a very like a good conversation, very like a serious one, but also it was hilarious the whole time, and I really enjoyed it, and I think it turned out well. So everyone, check it out.
All right, and that's on the PlayStation Pop feed. Scott, what do you got? Anything going on this week?
Main Event, it's the off week for Main Event. Check out last week's episode. We did Nate and I did some news and notes, and then we did the New Japan Classic match pick, and we did two matches honoring the late, great Vader. This week, and I'm just I'm going to play my own kayfabe. I am going to be the debut guest this week on a big-time podcast that will be making its premiere soon on the PTBM Pop feed. But that's all I'm going to say. You'll have to stay tuned to find out. But I will be the first guest on a brand new podcast that will be coming out on the Pop feed very soon. So stay tuned.
All right. Very, very good. New episode of Wrestling Warzone coming this week as well. Chad and I will be breaking down the night after In Your House 4 on Raw, and then that corresponding Nitro as well. So stay tuned for that. And, of course, the newest episode of No Holds Barred dropped last week with Aaron and myself. We talked about that 80s tournament, did some more GWE tag teams, and a few other topics as well. So be sure to peep that when you get a chance. So for Stacy and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time looking at the July 88 MSG House Show, the final of our little stretch here over the summer before we hit two big ones and then 500. It's knocking on the door. If you want to be part of the trivia tournament, just reach out and let us know, and we'll get you added to the list. That's all it takes. So for them, I'm out. For me, goodbye. Good night. One more dance, and I'm like, yeah, how the hell am I supposed to leave? And I say, yeah. In the club looking so conspicuous and wild. These women all on the prowl. If you hold the head steady, I'ma melt the cow. And forget about game, I'ma spit the truth. I won't stop till I get them in their birthday suits. So give me the rhythm and it'll be off with their clothes. Then bend over to the front and touch your toes. I left the Jag and I took the rolls. If they ain't cutting, then I put them on foot patrol. How you like me now when my pinky's valued over 300,000? Let's drink, you the one to please. Ludacris filled cups like double D. Me and us, what's more when we leave them dead? We want a lady in the street, but a freak in a bed that say, Sure, got the voice to make your booty go. Take that, rewind it back. Ludacris got the flow to make your booty go. Take that, rewind it back. Lil Jon got the beat to make your booty go.